Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Alright, I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
Oh. Right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here on this Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday. You're here, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 1:30 news, our good friend Lindsey Cochran is going to stop by in studio. We're also going to chat with Philip Armstrong and Eric Trayvon on the phone. They are all part of Great Moments in Vinyl, which, as you know, is Lindsey's project where he gathers together some of the best musicians you could possibly find in this city, and they pay tribute to great artists and great albums. And this Saturday at Martyrs, they will be playing tribute to Stevie Wonder with Songs in the Key of Life, which is only one of the greatest albums ever recorded. And so you can check out greatmomentsinvinyl.com, but we'll talk with Lindsey, Philip, and Eric about this upcoming gig on Saturday night at Martyrs, Songs in the Key of Life. Great Stevie Wonder stuff. That's coming up. Also, we're going to talk about the best live albums of all time and songs that have backwards messaging in them. And some famous movie locations that you can visit. And we've got all that and more coming up right here. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected with us on our Facebook page. It's a great way to stay connected. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. So like us and follow us now. facebook.com/Nick D Show. And also, subscribe to our podcasts. Our podcasts are really popular, and we thank you for that. Lots of people listen to us via podcast. Some people can't stay up between 1 and 5 a.m. in the middle of the morning. You can go to WGNradio.com, or you can check out iTunes. Go to wherever you get your podcasts. Sign up. They're free. It's free, and you'll get a podcast delivered directly to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there it is on this Tuesday morning. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Let me say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing, man?
All right. How was your trip?
It was great. It was a great time. First time to New York State. Beautiful upstate New
York. First of all, how was your flight going out? Because we had some wicked weather on the East Coast that morning when we flew out.
Yeah, it was actually not too bad. Got delayed about an hour, but not even related to weather.
Oh.
Yeah, it was just kind of like planes not going to the right place or whatever. But
did you fly out of O'Hare?
Yeah, flew out of O'Hare on United. Only complaint was that the plane heading there was really small, so my knees were like in chest. And
well, you're a big guy anyway.
So. Yeah, so it was extra troublesome. But I did have the unique experience of watching The Exorcist on my phone next to a nun.
Why? Wait. Hold on. It's like, wait a minute. How did that? How?
So, you know, when I go on flights, when I go on a flight, I like to, you know, I have a little digital library of movies that I'll just watch on the plane, and downloaded The Exorcist because I wanted to keep up with the 31 Days of Horror thing, and I hadn't gotten to The Exorcist yet, so I just popped that on my phone. And I'm sitting there and just kind of waiting for takeoff. And the flight was so short that I knew I wasn't going to get the whole thing in if I started watching when we took off. So I'd started watching it before we even started taxiing and getting ready to go. And I'm sitting there watching it, and all of a sudden, the person who comes to sit next to me is like full in the habit.
That's so wrong on so many levels.
She saw it too. She looked over.
Oh man,
sees Father Karras and everything like that.
That's just weird, man.
It was great.
Now, did you talk to her?
I did.
Yeah,
I did. And she's like,
had she seen The Exorcist before?
Oh, a million times.
I'm sure.
Yeah, she was. She was a Catholic nun, and yeah. She was. I don't know what she was. I can't remember why she was going to upstate New York. Something with, you know, just for religious services, whatever. But I asked her, I was like, "Oh, do you like The Exorcist?" She's like, "Yeah, I love it."
That's great.
She said it was one of her favorite movies. She's like, well, you know, it's all real. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
She started to freak me out.
That's really funny, man. That is so funny. You're watching The Exorcist and a nun in full habit sits down next to you. There's something weird going on there. That must have been.
It was an aligning of the stars.
There was
really.
Something, but that was a sign.
Yeah.
But you, I'll tell you what, though. That's when you knew the flight was going to be okay.
Oh, I was very comfortable after that. I was just like, well, she's taken care of, so yeah. If I'm sitting next to her and we're, you know, we're on good terms.
Watching The Exorcist next to a nun.
I saw her peek over a few times.
Yeah.
I saw her peek over. She was enjoying it.
Oh, man, that's hilarious. All right, well, welcome back. But you're going to be off again tomorrow.
Yeah, just a quick, you know, thing with you know, I run some of the emergency closing stuff here, so we're just updating the new system. So Ben's going to step in again. So
Ben will fill in tomorrow. And we've already got guests. We're going to talk tech tomorrow, and our good friend George Karzis from the Gale Street Inn has a really fantastic event that's happening tomorrow night, Wednesday night. So tomorrow morning we'll get him on to talk about that, and check out GaleStreet.com. So that'll be coming up, and then you'll be back for your regular stuff on Thursday.
Thursday and Friday. Very much looking forward to doing the VIX picks on Friday.
Yeah, It's number one. It's the number one album. And speaking of VIX picks, in the newsroom is our good buddy Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Morning, sir.
Have you ever sat next to a nun and watched The Exorcist?
I was going to say we should talk to Tom about burying the lead, because you don't lead with first time visiting New York State. You will always lead with I watched The Exorcist on my flight seated next to a nun.
That's funny.
An amazing statement.
Isn't that crazy?
Man,
could you imagine that? You're sitting there watching The Exorcist, suddenly a nun, full habit, the whole thing, sits down next to you.
I got to be honest, I'd probably...
Would you freak out?
I wouldn't
out?
Have the courage. I'd probably pick another... I'd think in my mind, oh, I can't watch The Exorcist. Tom watches it. I love it.
Well, I like the fact that she loved the movie.
That is cool.
That's pretty funny.
That's interesting.
Funny.
Wow.
Yeah, God, that's funny. Man, that is funny.
Good.
Yeah. Well, how you doing, Vic? You good?
Yeah, great.
All right, he's in the newsroom till 5 a.m. Well, actually, you're in the newsroom longer than that, but you are covering all the news for us through my show, which ends at 5. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. So the new I want to talk about this. We're going to take a break here in a couple of minutes, but the new Star Wars. The last trailer for the new Star Wars movie debuted online yesterday, and that's for the Rise of Skywalker is what it's called, and it debuted and everybody was talking about it online, so I figured we'd talk about it. If you've seen the new Star Wars trailer for the Rise of Skywalker and you want to jump in with your thoughts on it, 312-981-7200. Have you seen the trailer for the new Star Wars movie?
I did, yeah.
The latest one?
Yeah. It's a weird feeling, because this is supposedly it. They're not going to do any more Skywalker stuff. There's going to be plenty more Star Wars, but no more Skywalker stuff. So
Right. Hopefully
they end on a high note. I know the last one was controversial.
Liked the last one.
I loved it. I thought it was one of the best. But,
I thought it was great. People hated it, though.
Yeah, I think we might be in somewhat of the minority, at least if the internet is to be believed. But
yeah.
The internet's the internet.
You know, Eric loves it. Our good buddy Colin.
Yeah.
Loves it. You know, I thought it was really good. I thought it was really good.
Yeah. I know Eric is a huge Star Wars fan.
He and Colin.
So if I'm on, you know, if I err on their side, if that means that I'm in line with that, you know what? I feel good about myself.
Yeah. I mean, I, and again, I'm not a big Star Wars guy.
Right.
I'm not. I mean, I was never, you know, it never, it's weird too. And I've said this before. I was 12 when Star Wars came out, so I should have gone nuts. You know what I mean? Like, it should have totally been in my wheelhouse. And like my friends, going to see it every single, you know, every single day. They would just go over and over again and see it. But it just didn't do it for me. And I've mentioned this before. The movie that captured my imagination that same year was Close Encounters. That's the one that I gravitated towards. That's the one that I loved. That's the one that I saw multiple times in the theater. And I don't know what that says about me as a 12-year-old kid, you know, liking a movie about a, you know, like a midlife crisis that a guy is going through. The reboot that J.J. Abrams did, I thought The Force Awakens was terrific.
Yeah, I had a really good time with that.
Yeah, I thought the last one was really good too. I liked The Last Jedi. I like that. Hell, I liked Solo. I thought Solo was fun. And yeah. I know that movie, people hated that. But my favorite, as we've discussed many, many times, is Rogue One. That's my favorite of any Star Wars movie ever in the history. Since 1977, Rogue One is my favorite of all of them. So I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't get as excited about this stuff as a lot of people do. And I understand this. You know, this is legendary stuff. And Star Wars is, you know, one of the biggest franchises in film history. So, and I understand that people really, really love, you know, the franchise and love the characters. And so I can understand the excitement. I just don't get as excited. I watched the trailer, you know, and I thought, okay, you know, looks pretty cool, you know. But then there are people who watch it and, like, analyze it. Like over and over, watch it over and over and over again for little Easter eggs and analyze every single portion of the trailer. And that's cool, you know, because people love these movies and they get excited about it. The movie opens December 20th. And if you haven't seen the trailer, it debuted yesterday online. And if you saw it, I want to hear from you guys. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The new Star Wars trailer for The Last Jedi.
The Rise of Skywalker.
Right, yeah. The Rise of Skywalker.
I've lost track of the names.
Yeah. I got to say this. You know, the new additions, you know, the characters that J.J. Abrams brought to the fold, I really like Daisy Ridley a lot. I think Rey's great.
Yeah, and she's got a huge career ahead of her.
Yeah.
A massive career.
I mean, I think she's pretty terrific. And I've liked her since the very first one. I liked her on Murder on the Orient Express, too. I'm a big fan. And John Boyega, I loved him in that Alien movie,
Attack the Block.
Oh man, I love that movie.
It's a ton of fun.
Yeah, terrific movie, and he's great in it. But anyway, you know, if you guys are excited about it, what did you think of the trailer? Are you looking forward to it? I know a lot of people were disappointed in the last movie. I happen to like it, but I want to hear from you guys. The Star Wars trailer is out, and if you guys are excited about it, let's hear from you. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We'll take a break. We come back, talk more about the Star Wars trailer, and then after the 1:30 news, Lindsey Cochran will be in studio. We'll talk with Philip Armstrong and Eric Tavon from Great Moments and Vinyl. They're doing a performance of Songs in the Key of Life by Stevie Wonder this Saturday night, and we'll tell you all the details on that, too. That's right here on 720 WGN. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. I thought maybe you were going to come back with Bill Murray's Lounge Singer.
I was trying to.
Doing the Star Wars thing.
Nothing but Star Wars.
Oh, man. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio. We're going to talk about movie locations that you can visit. We got the greatest live albums of all time and much more. All right. Let's see. We've got the new Star Wars trailer debuted yesterday. And if you get ticket pre-sales at Adam Tickets, and by the way, the Star Wars movies the tickets are already on sale. They're already, you can get the Rise of Skywalker is going to be even bigger than the Avengers Endgame. Ticket pre-sales for the next installment of the Star Wars franchise opened on Monday night, and within an hour, the film had broken the record set by Avengers Endgame on ticket sales site Adam Tickets. According to CNBC, The Rise of Skywalker sold 45% more tickets in its first hour of pre-sales compared to Endgame, which, by the way, is the biggest movie ever made. Pre-sales kicked off shortly before the next trailer for the Rise of Skywalker premiered during Monday Night Football. Within minutes of the trailer dropping, fans were already sharing theories and reactions on social media. Brandon Katz shared on Twitter, to date, Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker has sold 45% more tickets on Atom Tickets in the first hour of pre-sales than Avenger Endgame did earlier this year. The first hour of pre-sales for Skywalker sets a new record. It wasn't the first look at the film. A teaser trailer came out in April, and a sizzle reel of highlights was shown at the Disney fan gathering at D23 in August. That's when fans got a glimpse of Rey's double-bladed red lightsaber there, leading of plenty of theories as to whether Rey would turn to the dark side. Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker opens December 20th worldwide. So there you go. Is there there are already theories that she's going to go to the dark side?
I mean, it's the internet is just full of theories. Like, yeah. They see one thing and they decide to analyze it and they try to justify it. I find it to be a really tiresome process, really.
That's pretty impressive, though. 45% more ticket sales than Avengers Endgame. That's pretty impressive. I wonder what the running time is going to be of this.
Oh, man.
My guess is long.
I hope so. Just give it time to breathe and just wrap it all up, tie up all the loose ends.
Yeah, because you got to wrap everything up. I mean, I think the last two that J.J. Abrams was responsible. Well, Ryan Johnson did the last one, but they weren't overt. They weren't too long. I think Force Awakens is over 2 hours. I think Force Awakens is like 2 hours and 15 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, I believe that Last Jedi was pushing 2.5.
Really?
If I'm not mistaken.
Okay. I don't remember that. I enjoyed it. I remember enjoying it. But yeah, I guess they're gonna go. They'll go for some length here, I guess.
Yeah, The Last Jedi was 2.5 hours. A little over.
It was?
Yeah, it was 2.5 hours.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, Force Awakens was 2:15. So, who knows? Who knows?
That last one didn't seem long to me at all.
No, it moved at a pretty good clip.
It did. 2.5 hours is a long movie. Normally, if like I see the running time of 2.5 hours, I go, uh-oh. You know? And I saw that Suspiria, when the first running time of the remake of Suspiria was posted last year, it took 2 hours and 40 minutes, 2 hours, 45 minutes. I was like, are you kidding me? And, of course, it's awesome.
It's like two Suspirias in one.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's like double the running time of the original Suspiria, almost. Well, there it goes. Record sales, pre-sale tickets are going like crazy. So if you want to get your tickets for Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, I would imagine most of the sales are for what? Opening night? They got to be, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be. Everybody's going in IMAX. Everybody's going to go, you know, they want to go opening night. That's where the tickets are really going. Like on some random Thursday in December, yeah. I don't see the tickets flying out the door. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, there have been a bunch of people saying that they're going to boycott this one, and yet here they
are. Why are they going to boycott? Because of the last one?
Because they were so upset. Oh, I mean, there were petitions to even have Disney redo The Last Jedi. Come on.
Stupid. Well, anyway, it doesn't seem like to affect the ticket sales so far. All right, so The Rise of Skywalker is out there. The trailer's fun, and the movie is already on sale. So there you go, breaking records. All right, let's take a quick break here. We got the news coming up, and then Lindsey Cochran, Philip Armstrong, and Eric Trayvon are going to join us from Great Moments in Vinyl right here on WGN. Isn't she lovely? Isn't she wonderful? Isn't she precious? Less than 1 minute. I never thought. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here in downtown Chicago here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. We are going to be talking about some famous movie locations that you can visit, the greatest live albums of all time, and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us right here on 720 WGN. What you just heard was Great Moments in Vinyl rehearsing Songs in the Key of Life, which obviously is a pretty good album. And live in studio with me is Lindsey Cochran. He is the guy who organizes and puts together the Great Moments in Vinyl, gathers together some of the best musicians that you can possibly find in and around this city. And then they pay tribute to some really great artists.
I inspire them. I say that in the sense of I find music that people want to do. You know, they don't get the chance to sing some of these songs if they play, you know, like a wedding band or something like that.
Yeah.
Only so many times you could do Proud Mary. But you do songs in the key of life, suddenly you're singing things that no one's going to ask for at a wedding, and it's yeah. great.
We are going to be joined on the phone here in a couple of seconds by Philip Armstrong and Eric Trayvon, who are also going to be a part of this gig on Saturday night at Martyrs, which is your home.
Our
home
little theater. Residency. Yeah, 3855 North Lincoln. I realized I put together those posters and then I never put the address on them. So people are saying, oh, great. I'd love to come. Where is it?
Yeah. Well, it's on Lincoln Avenue. It's in Chicago at Martyrs, which is a great room, by the way. And Great Moments in Vinyl. First of all, tell everybody about Great Moments in Vinyl.
Well, what it is a chance to play albums, to play songs that we love. Not just songs that we love because, hey, we're cool musicians. It's like more we're music fans, and we find these albums that people really respond to, and we bring them to the stage, in a sense, to say, don't you love this music too? It's not about us. It's about these great albums that we like to celebrate and resurrect, if you will.
Yeah.
And talking about Eric Trayvon and Philip Armstrong are going to join us. I could not do this show without them. Songs in the Key of Life, Stevie Wonder. I mean, you need the right musicians.
Yeah.
I found these guys.
Well, let's first of all tell me about who else is in the band, who's going to be playing with you, and then we'll get Philip and Eric on.
Absolutely. Well, just to start with the vocalist, I mentioned Philip and Eric, and then also Monique Golding, who you just heard in the opening link there, singing Isn't She Lovely, because Monique is great with child. We figured if she's pregnant, this is a song she's got to sing.
Yeah.
So the three of them come from the Mosaic Soul Vocal Ensemble, and it's just a wonderful little ensemble that does all sorts of songs in the multiple harmonies and all that sort of stuff. So I worked with them on the Paul Simon Show. They were my Ladysmith Black Mambazo Chorus.
Mm-hmm.
They did Prince with me. Eric sang a Kate Bush show with us. So I just love these guys. Love what they do. Also in the band, Clarence Williams Jr., a local keyboard player. You know, I worked at WNUA for a while.
Yeah.
Bill Cochran, I was part of the smooth jazz hierarchy over there. And occasionally I would sit in on the morning show, and the morning show person would be gone, the co-host, Karen Williams. I would be co-hosting with Ramsey Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing the Stevie Wonder show, putting it together. And I think to myself, I got to find a keyboard player who can represent this stuff, you know? And I call me ambitious, call me nervy. I wrote to Ramsey and said, can you suggest someone? I'm not looking for someone at your level or even the level of the guys that work with you at, but maybe, you know, they know someone. And they put this Clarence Williams Jr. fellow in my Rolodex, and I called the guy, and wow.
Yeah.
I mean, hearing him play on those little snippets, he's just amazing. So got the four of them. We've got Alton Smith, who's worked with us before,
yeah.
Doing second keyboards and other sorts of fill-in stuff. Bob Kessler.
Ah, yes.
Name dropping here at WGN, famous WGN newscaster. So
yep.
He's playing harmonica.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Johnny Reed on drums and Scott Tipping on guitar. They've been with me for Prince and Elton John and Led Zeppelin and various other shows. But these guys, they're just monsters in their instruments. And then a horn section. John Bowes, whom you've spoken with before, because
yep.
you've worked with Aretha Franklin, the OJs, those kind of people. He's lined up a couple other musicians, Chuck Parrish and Nick Bassezzi. Nick Bassezzi, who also used to work with Ramsey Lewis years and years ago.
Yeah.
So it's a great ensemble. Just hearing us in the rehearsals, hearing us bring this stuff together, it's been like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, you can't argue with the album. I mean, it's one of the best albums of all
time. It's a classic.
Let's talk with a couple of the members that you just mentioned who are going to be there. Let me welcome first Philip Armstrong to the show. Philip, welcome to the show.
Hello. Good evening, everyone.
All right. And let's say hello to Eric Trayvon. Eric, how are you?
Hello. Hi.
Good. Philip, let's start with you. What's your background? Where are you from and all that good stuff?
Oh, my gosh. Well, my background, I'm born and raised in Chicago. First on the West Side, and then, you know, became a Southsider and grew up in Oak Lawn, where I went to high school at Oak Lawn Community High School, and later on continued my academic life at Millikan University, which is where Eric and I met, and we just so happened to have been a part of the same ensembles there. And then, of course, came right on back here in Chicago, but even through that, I grew up in one of the top leading performing arts organizations here in the city of Chicago, the Chicago Children's Choir, which is under the direction of and led by Josephine Lee, Judy Hansen, amongst many other great music educators in that world. And that's really where my entire life, as far as music and the discipline of music and being able to see and experience multiple things in the world, traveling, you know, I was traveling the world my first time out of the country was to Japan with that organization, right? So, you know, imagine being a sixth grader, getting a chance to sing on these international stages at such a young age.
Yeah.
That really kind of pushed my entire vision to just wanting to have music in my life, work as a musician, as an artist, and, you know, to continuously meet people along my journey that I could share these experiences with.
Wow. All right, Eric, what about you? Where are you from, sir?
Oh, I am from, I was born and raised in Hyde Park, and now I am currently residing in Jeffrey Manor. Of course, I went to Kenwood Academy High School, which is located in Hyde Park. That's pretty much where music, my inspiration for music began. And then, of course, as Philip stated, I did continue my collegiate career at Millikan University, majoring in commercial music. And Phil and I did end up in a few of the same organizations, such as Vocal Jazz, and as well as the same university choir. And we never really lost, I never really lost touch with Phil. Honestly, I would say that he is a catalyst for my connection to Lindsay, which I think is so great. And being a part of Great Moments and Vinyl and also just having this opportunity has been something so amazing and so beneficial to my growth as an artist and as a musician as well. So, yeah.
That's great. Yeah, Great Moments and Vinyl will be playing Songs in the Key of Life by Stevie Wonder. Lindsay, tell us about the album. I mean, people know this. I mean, it's one of the greatest albums of all time.
Well, I mean, Stevie was on a roll there. How do we back this up? Back in the 60s, he was making hit singles. That's what Motown was about.
As a kid.
He was like, I think he may still hold the record as the youngest number one single holder on the Billboard charts. But anyway, we're talking the 1960s. 64 to 68, he put out so many hit singles, he was able to release a greatest hits package. And he was still a teenager. But Hitsville, USA, they were all about hits. And Stevie's thinking to himself, I don't want to make hits. I want to make albums.
Right.
He wants to be an artist. I mean, you can't fault him for it. But it's not only I want to do that, I know I can do that. And then he sets out to do it. Music in My Mind, or Music of My Mind. And then a Talking Book. And then Inner Visions. And then Fulfilling His First Finale. I mean, talk about home runs, to use a WGN metaphor here with the baseball season, that sort of thing. The man was just incredible with what he did musically. Come 1976, I don't know if he was tired. I don't know what was going on. His contract was expiring with Motown, and he was talking to them about, do I really want to keep working with you? Maybe I want to go to Africa and do charity work in Ghana. And that had the guys at Motown sweating in their boots.
Yeah.
So they came back to him with a $13 million contract, just $13 million just for staying with the label. And then he got extra money if he released any records. But $13 million just up front. I mean, at the same period.
Wow.
Paul McCartney and Elton John had been offered $8 million by their record companies just to be with the label. Stevie got 13. I like what Babyface once said about Stevie Wonder. He's like the Beatles, only he's just one guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
all that music that he created and still creates. True. Just ongoing. Anyway, Songs in the Key of Life, pinnacle of his career, a chance to stretch out and just let himself do as much as he wanted. I mean, the problem wasn't getting Stevie to make that new album when Motown signed him. The problem was getting Stevie to finish making that new album. So it stretched out over like a year and a half, 2 years. Finally came out. What do we got? 4 album sides and an EP.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right, you guys hang on, okay? Philip?
Okay.
Eric, hang on. We're going to put those guys on hold. Hang on a second. We'll come back. We'll talk more about Stevie Wonder. Songs in the Key of Life will be performed by Great Moments in Vinyl this Saturday night at Martyrs on Lincoln Avenue. You can check out greatmomentsandvinyl.com for more information. It's this Saturday night at 9 o'clock. All right, we'll take a break here, and we'll come back with more with Lindsay Cochran, Philip Armstrong, and Eric Trayvon from Great Moments in Vinyl as they perform Stevie Wonder this Saturday night.
I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster.
could change your joy in laughter to the...
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. What you just heard is Great Moments in Vinyl performing Songs in the Key of Life by Stevie Wonder. Great Moments in Vinyl is orchestrated by Lindsey Cochran, incredible musicians that get together to pay tribute to artists and great albums. And Lindsey's live in studio with me. Lindsey, welcome back.
Thank you. Incredible musicians paying tribute to incredible albums.
That's right. And let's get Philip Armstrong back. Philip, welcome back.
Yes, I'm back. I'm here.
And
thank you.
Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let me just drop in. That was Philip we heard singing on
that song.
That was Philip.
Very nice.
That
very,
was me.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Philip, what's your connection with Stevie Wonder? Do you remember when you first heard Stevie Wonder and how as
oh, my
an artist
God,
affected
yeah.
you?
Yeah. When I first heard Stevie Wonder, my dad bought me. My dad is really, my dad and my mom are really the reason, but my dad particularly, because he spent a lot of time with me, bought me, I forget the actual like album, but it's the one with Heaven Help Us All. Gosh, I'm blanking on some of the other songs, but that was one of the first songs that I actually learned when I was in the choir growing up, Heaven Help Us All. And of course, As, I remember singing it, singing that at a wedding of one of our family friend members, you know, in my family. So that was, you know, my first initial connection to understanding the music and who this artist was growing up. And I think I was about like maybe like 10, 11, yeah, you know, 12 around that age. But I mean, you know, music, I have old school parents, you know, music is that style of music in my house was always playing.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
So I think even when I was a little child, maybe I didn't know exactly who it was, but I knew, like, I knew the sound.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All right, Eric.
Yeah, many people can say that.
Eric, what about you? How, your connection to Stevie Wonder as a kid when you first heard him?
Wow. So I had no business watching this movie, guys, but I don't know if y'all remember Poetic Justice with Janet Jackson. Okay, so there's a scene in the movie where she's like combing her hair, and then the first song that comes on is I'd Never Dream You Leave in Summer. That was my first introduction to Stevie Wonder. I was just like, wait, who is this singing? Who is this singing? And I had to like find out what the song was. And on top of that, it's so funny, Phil, that you said that, because one of the first Stevie Wonder songs that I actually had to sing, got to sing as well in high school, was As. And and like we sang that for an event when I was in my high school choir. And at that time, I had to have like all those words memorized. So that was, of course, the challenge. And you all know how wordy that song is.
Overall,
Stevie Wonder has had a huge involvement in my life overall, of course, like my family listening to it and just overall growing up with him. And the meaning of the songs always change as you get older, because they're just so relevant to everything that's happening in, I would say, all of our daily lives. So
can I just say that one of the highlights?
Can I just add real quick?
Oh, go ahead.
Can I just add this?
You add something.
I lied. Third grade. How could I forget this? Third grade, Sir Duke. My music teacher.
We sang
that as children for, it was like 10 of us in the choir, and I remember that specifically. I would say that's the first song I learned.
Now, what were you going to say, Linda?
My little addition was one of the highlights of the show. One of the things worth the price of admission is when we do As, and then you hear Eric do that break in the middle. We all know. Oh my gosh, at rehearsal when he hit that part, it was like, oh.
Oh, there you go.
Wow.
So, the other thing about Great Moments in Vinyl that we always talk about, Lindsey, is that it's you know, obviously you're celebrating all this, these great artists and these great music, and it doesn't get much better than Stevie Wonder.
Oh, no. I know.
So, but you always tell stories. You talk
I try to fill in the background. I try to tell you
so
a little bit.
What do you got for any little tidbits about songs in the Key of Life?
Well, Stevie, well, one thing, friends and family, people he work with, they call him Steve. He's not Stevie to them. He's Steve. There's no way to sugarcoat how Stevie Wonder began his life. Handicapped in poverty with a wayward father and then a broken home. And yet somehow this blind child who grew up in or near the housing projects of Detroit was able to heighten his other senses to tap into the glorious possibilities of sound. While classmates derided him for his blindness, telling him he could only expect a future making potholders or something like that, young Stevie was hearing music and listening and teaching himself about notes, about melodies, about harmonies and rhythms, about how they all fit together. God bless the neighbor who let him come over and play on her piano for hours at a time. God bless that barber who gave him a chromatic harmonica. God bless the Lions Club Lodge who surprised him with a drum set as a Christmas present. It was a rough way to begin in life, but somehow Stevie Wonder not only found something meaningful and powerful to do with the talents he'd been given, he also came through those difficult days of his childhood with an astonishing message on his lips. It's a message that has surfaced time and time again in his songs, a message that is as appropriate and as necessary for those of us who enjoy his music today as it was at any point that he sang about it in his now 50-plus years career. It's a simple message and a powerful one. It is the message of love.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of incredible to think, because, you know, like you just mentioned, 50 years he's been doing music.
He's been part of it. So many people come and go in that time.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just what's amazing is he was 13. He was 13 years old. And that was when he was little Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
And I mean, that's an incredible career, and to see how, as an artist, he grew.
Yeah.
And you know, and some of the stuff that he's done, especially on this album, and
the chances he took over the years. I mean, working with those synthesizer guys in the early 70s. I can't pronounce the names, but Tonto's Expanding Headband was their group. But all that synth stuff you hear on, like, Boogie On Reggae Woman, or some of the more parts of Superstition, that album, the Talking Book album, he was just trying things that people hadn't tried. Or going on tour to open for the Rolling Stones in the early 70s. That's what helped introduce him to a white audience, a rock audience, made him a full crossover artist. He wasn't just this R&B artist.
Yeah.
He was a man who just made amazing music.
Yeah. Just amazing. Now, you know, you guys, Philip and Eric, it's the first time you've been on my show, and I always ask musicians a specific couple of questions. So, Philip, let me start with you. What was the first album you ever bought? First album you ever bought?
The first album I ever bought was it was James Cleveland, Making It Home. James Cleveland, the gospel artist.
Okay.
Chicago, yes.
Okay. All right, Eric, what about you? What was your first album?
Janet Jackson, Velvet Rope.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Wow, that shows how old I am. Philip, what was your first concert?
My first concert, or big concert, was seeing Beyonce.
All right.
Yes.
Eric, what about you?
Well, I feel like I'm giving away some Janet fandom, so it was a Janet concert. Yep.
Well, there you go.
I think we got a fan here.
Yeah, I think so.
Eric,
you haven't
talked to me about doing a Janet Jackson show yet. Why not?
Oh, we'll get into it. Why not, right?
You know, some of the things here that I'm looking at, about tidbits about the album, is that Prince called it the best album ever recorded, Songs of the Key of Life. Elton John takes a copy of it with him wherever he travels.
Something to listen to.
Wow.
And Kanye West cited it as one of the albums that he competes with as to when he creates his own music. Which, of course, sounds like something Kanye West would say.
Right.
Keep trying,
right.
Kanye. You know, here's a couple other quotes. Bob Dylan once observed that if anybody can be called a genius, Stevie Wonder can. Elvis Costello considered him the most influential musician alive. And Marvin Gaye once posed the question, what artist in his right mind wouldn't be intimidated by Stevie Wonder?
Yeah, all of that is true. And I think here's the thing. You know, we're acknowledging Stevie Wonder right now, but I think somehow we take him for granted.
Yeah, he's always been
there. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
He's always been there. I don't think he gets the praise that he deserves on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I think he's just, but he's always been there, you know? Yep. But he's one of the best. He's one of the best.
He's a contemporary of Dylan. They both released their first albums in 1962.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
I mean, I teach children, you know, music throughout the day, and I just introduced many kids to Stevie Wonder, this generation. So, yeah, you're right.
It's important. All right, Philip.
It's very important.
Philip, Eric, nice to meet you guys, and have fun on Saturday, okay?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
thank
guys,
you for having us.
There you go. There's Philip and Eric, and they will be performing with Great Moments in Vinyl, and that's this Saturday night at Martyrs. You can check out greatmomentsinvinyl.com, and we have a link on our Facebook page for it. Lindsay, always a pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Excuse me. And it's always great to have, new musicians on the show, introduce
like
me to a lot of
really
great, all this great stuff. And is there anything else coming up for you guys? You got anything
Phil Angotti, I like to work with him from time
Phil.
To time. Yeah. He wants to do a Kinks show. So
of course he does.
We've put something together. We're going to call All the Hit Singles and Something Else.
Nice.
He wants to do the album Something Else, which I think is a great idea. We like to do albums, but you know, the Kinks are kind of a tricky thing. Not every album is Fleetwood Mac's Rumors, you know?
Right.
So we're going to do all these hit songs as well as that one.
Great.
Derek and the Dominoes.
Nice.
Last part of January with Scott Tipping, and Scott Tipping is Eric Clapton and Bill Grady as Dwayne Allman.
There we go.
And we're looking at other things in the new year. David Bowie, Billy Joel.
So. Great. All right. Well, this Saturday night, October 26th at Martyrs on Lincoln Avenue, Great Moments and Vinyl will play Songs in the Key of Life by Stevie Wonder. Always a pleasure, Lindsay. Thank you,
sir.
Buddy. Okay. We'll take a break and we'll come back with the news on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here on a Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. You hear me, 2 for Tuesday? Who requested the Stones?
That's coming to us from Sam.
All right, Sam. Wanted to hear some Stones. There you go. 2 for Tuesday. All right, welcome back. We are going to be talking about the best live albums of all time and some movie location stuff, but some fun stuff here. VH1.com put this together. Some artists and some bands like to mess around in the studio a little bit, you know, and fool around, and some bands have put some backwards messages in their songs. And this used to be a thing that we would do, you know, that we would listen to when we had vinyl. You know, you would take the turntable and turn it backwards, so that you could hear the secret messages that bands were putting in. You know, there's one on the wall, Pink Floyd, The Wall, where it says, "Congratulations, you've found the secret message." I'm pretty sure it's on the wall. And I can't remember what song, but they go so far as to say it's Roger Waters saying, "Congratulations, you've found the secret message."
Was on Empty Spaces?
Empty Spaces, maybe? Yeah, that's probably what it is. Yeah. So, but that was one of my favorites when I was younger. Well, I mean, I used to listen to Pink Floyd The Wall like 50,000 times a day when that album first came out. But you have it?
Yeah. All right. So, here's this is from Empty Spaces, Backmasked Secret Message.
Here we go. Yeah, and you're supposed to mail something to them.
Yeah, please send your answer to Old Pink, care of the Funny Farm, Chalfont, UK.
Yeah, so they decided that would be funny to put that in there, and it does sound weird too when you're playing stuff backwards. It always sounds weird. Look, you just watched The Exorcist on a plane.
Yeah,
and there's some fantastic backwards speaking in that, which is just, you know, I've always, every time I watch that movie. And I've watched it many, 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 many times. I don't know how the hell Jason Miller at like 2 o'clock in the morning alone in his apartment is listening to that audio. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, how? Freaky. What? You know, but, and speaking of, I always want to mention this. I think one of the most unsung great performances in movie history is Jason Miller in The Exorcist. He's incredible in the movie, and it's really about him. You know, I mean, everybody thinks that Max von Sydow plays The Exorcist. The movie's about Father Karras, and what he's going through, you know. And it's a great performance, just like a really, really, really great performance. And then his son would go on to be awesome in Near Dark and in River's Edge. Joshua Miller, that was Jason Miller's son. But yeah, now Jason Miller in The Exorcist, that is a really great performance.
Well, you know what's really funny is, like, if you look up Jason Miller, he's referred to not as an actor but as a playwright.
Yeah,
and I love that. I love they had such a big career. He wasn't just
no. He's a very successful playwright.
Yeah.
So anyway, we've got some people like to fool around in the studio. There's Pink Floyd over there. Roger Waters, congratulations. You found the secret message. Because you take the time to play your albums backwards, which is what we did in the 70s, man.
Not a whole lot else to do.
What are you going to do tonight? I'm just going to play my albums backwards, man. And hopefully a secret message will pop up. So VH1 put this together. By way of introduction, it says rock and roll originally had a reputation as the devil's music. But some of these folks took it a little too literally. Since the late 1960s, rumors have run rampant that famous bands are hiding secret satanic messages in their music, played backwards so it can sneak into our subconscious and our subconscious mind unnoticed. From classic groups like the Beatles and Led Zeppelin through the metal boom of the 80s, and even to today, the stories are endless. Sometimes it's clearly unintentional, and occasionally musicians are just having a bit of fun at the expense of their fans. But then sometimes the words are a little too clear, and it's spooky. Is there some truth to the mysterious messages? Or do people just have way too much free time on their hands? All right. Well, let's see. Let's see if we can figure this stuff out. Okay, so Another One Bites the Dust by Queen. And by the way, if you guys have done this in the past, you know, the backwards masking stuff, and you played your records backwards and discovered some of them, what are some of your favorites? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. This is going to be a little creepy, too, because it's Halloween time, and we get to hear some stuff going backwards. It'll be fun. So Another One Bites the Dust. It says here, we'll start off with something that isn't too scary, unless you have asthma or something. Evangelical Christian groups were convinced that Freddie Mercury's scant vocal breakdown at the end of the song sounded like "It's Fun to Smoke Marijuana" when played in reverse. So it's supposed to say "It's fun to smoke marijuana" when you play it in reverse. We have to admit it does sound pretty similar. It's interesting to note that a decent number of backwards masking tends to revolve around weed, which is probably what inspired folks to play the records backwards in the backwards in the first place. All right, so this is from Another One Bites the Dust. Freddie Mercury having a little breakdown here. Played backwards, it sounds suspiciously like "It's Fun to Smoke Marijuana." All right, let's hear it. That's pushing it a little bit, don't you think?
I can hear it. I don't know about you, man. I can hear a little bit of it.
It's pushing it a little bit, man.
Well, a lot of these are kind of pushing
it. Oh, yeah.
A lot of these are like, yeah, yes and no.
It's fun to smoke marijuana. Get out of here.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to sneak that in there for all the cool kids out there, I guess.
Yeah.
With their lids and things of that nature.
Well, let's see. All right, Hotel California by the Eagles. This one's pretty famous. It's an ode to the sinister yet seductive draw of Hollywood, but some lyrics might hint at an even darker power. If you listen to the opening verse backwards, you might be able to make out the words that sound spookily like, "Yes, Satan organized is my own religion," and other messages from the devil. If you play it forward, you get something even more terrifying, an Eagles song. I like the person who wrote that.
Yeah.
Not a fan of the Eagles.
No, not at all. It's not the best.
No, not a fan of the Eagles. In fact, I'm with the dude. I'm with the Big Lebowski on his hatred for the Eagles. All right, so this is supposed to say, this is Hotel California, and it is the opening verse backwards, which suspiciously apparently sounds like, "Yes, Satan organized his own religion." What? What?
That one I'm not getting.
I didn't hear, yes, Satan organized his own religion anywhere in that. Who heard that? Hey, didn't they do another one of the, remember the dress? What color is this dress? And everybody was seeing.
Oh, yeah.
They just did another one with shoes.
Oh, no, not again.
Yeah, well, you see a different color. And what was the audio one?
Laurel and Yanny.
Right. Laurel and Yanny. I remember when that first started, I heard Laurel, and then, like, it changed. Like, suddenly I heard Yanny. So, I don't know.
I don't know, man.
But I clearly did not hear, yes, Satan organized his own religion. That was not clear at all. Laurel and Yanny. That was a thing for 15 minutes.
It was a nightmare is what it was.
And that dress, and now there's a shoe where it's supposed to be pink, but it looks green, or green, but it's supposed to be pink, or whatever it is. So, well, I didn't hear that. I'm sorry, Eagles. You didn't convince me of Satan.
You just convinced me you were bad.
You're just the Eagles. You still remain the Eagles. Okay, how about this one? Nightmare, the Dreamtime by Motorhead. This is from 1991. It's pretty hard to miss the long-winded battle cry on this track. Now tell me about your miserable little lives. I do not subscribe to your superstitious, narrow-minded flights of paranoia. I and people like me will always prevail. You will never stifle our free speech in any country in the world because we will fight forever. What? It says the album was released on the heels of Motorhead's multi-year legal battle with their record company. But there are some who say that it was the band's message to the censor-happy Parents Resource Music Center. All right. So this is on Nightmare Dreamtime by Motorhead. This is backwards, and let's hear. Is this Lemmy?
Yeah, this is Lemmy.
Okay, let's hear it.
About your miserable little life, I do not subscribe to your superstitious, narrow-minded, paranoia. Your life will always prevail. You will never.
Yeah. Okay, it's there.
Yeah, that one's definitely there. That's the clearest backmasking I've ever heard.
Yeah. Clearly did that on purpose. No question about it. All right. And it's a real long one, too. A lot of these are just, like, really short. What is that, like a minute?
Yeah, it's quite a dirge.
Wow. All right. All right, we got some more of these things. We'll take a break here. We've got more backwards masking, backwards messages in music. Yeah, if you guys did this with the, you know, you blew some weed and you played your records backwards and discovered some secret messages, we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That song is played during the nightclub scene in Nighthawks. Stallone and Billy Dee Williams looking for Rutger Hauer. Yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're getting a little spooky with some music here. Backwards messages. Ooh. Scary. Yeah. So, let's see. We got some texts that have been coming in here. I guess some people have been have been known to play their records backwards and learn and hear some things, and that's what we're doing. That Motorhead one was long though and obvious.
Yeah, it was very clear.
Yeah. All right, here's some text. 815 air code says, along the same lines, Nick, if you watch the Bears game from this Sunday where they just lost to the Saints backwards, it shows the entire Cubs 2019 season. It's a really weird phenomenon, but it's real. Has this guy been blowing weed? What's going on with this guy? 708 area code says, if you find any backwards messaging in a Motorhead song, it could be Do More Coke. Ugh. 262 area codes, backwards masking just makes me think of Top Secret and the bookstore. That is legendary scene. Peter Cushing, my main man Peter Cushing, is in that scene. The whole thing was shot in reverse. Like that's the film in reverse. And the reason why they did that is because they're supposed to be speaking Swedish. And the Zuckers and Abram maintain that the Swedish language sounds like English in reverse. So that's why they filmed the whole scene. That was the only, and for sight gags, so that they could do a bunch of sight gags. I love Top Secret. I love that movie. That's my favorite of the Zucker. I like it better than Airplane.
Really?
I think Top Secret's funnier than Airplane.
I mean, Top Secret's up there.
Yeah. I mean, there's for no reason, there is an underwater Western saloon fist fight for no reason. And I still think that that's absolute genius. It's like right in the middle of the movie, there's a saloon underwater. That's a weird movie too, man. Some of the sight gags in that movie, it's just weird. There's some stuff where they just go. But it's still, I mean, I think it's genius. All right, how about this? Final Scream by Grim Reaper. 1985. I'm not familiar with Grim Reaper. You familiar with Grim Reaper?
I've never heard of him, no.
All right.
No, I've not.
Well, here's what they say. Immediately after the child's voice says, "Goodnight, Daddy," a series of low, growling gibberish is heard. In reverse, it sounds an awful lot like "See You in Hell." It's pretty spooky, but it can also be just an homage to the previous album that they made, which was the same name. Grim Reaper. They released an album called "See You in Hell." There's a shock. All right, so this is Grim Reaper, right?
Yeah, so I'll play it forward, just because folks haven't probably heard this before, and then I'll play it back.
All right. Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
I like that.
That's pretty cool.
Good for you, Grim Reaper.
See you in hell. Never heard of Grim Reaper before, but that was pretty cool. I wonder if people are listening right now are freaking out. Do you think people are freaking out right now?
Well, I think
it's 2:25 a.m. and we're playing weird "See You in Hell" backwards stuff.
Well, I feel bad for anybody driving right now. I'm just like, oh, geez.
Yeah. Are we freaking out any pets? I haven't played the screaming guy in a little while.
Oh,
from geez. the scary sound CD.
This will have to do.
We could wake up all the cats in the neighborhood with that one. Gonna Raise Hell by Cheap Trick. Now, I love this song. This song is a jam. I didn't know that they did any backwards masking on this. It's from 1979. The 9-minute epic contains hidden backwards a message that is allegedly says, "You know Satan holds the key to the lock." Come on, man.
I will say this one's a little bit of a stretch.
Well, yeah, and it's Cheap Trick, man. Cheap Trick is not known for, like, Satan worship.
Yeah, but they probably had to sell their souls to get that good.
They're just cheap. They're Cheap Trick. They're the best. Man, oh, man. Speaking of great live albums, which we are going to do, Cheap Trick at Budokan. perhaps my favorite live album. Well, it's my second favorite live album, but we'll do that a little bit later on when we get into live albums. Okay, so Gonna Raise Hell by Cheap Trick. So the message allegedly says, you know Satan holds the keys to the lock. All right. Now, come on. No. No.
No.
No.
Are you sure? I could see Rick Nielsen probably worshiping
no.
the devil.
No.
His crazy hats.
He's just one of the goof. He's a goof. All right, we got a break here. We got more of these crazy backwards messages that we're unveiling here in music. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. As we run the sun, the earth knows seasons revolving, and the rosebuds know the bloom in early May. Just as hate knows love's the cure, you can rest your mind sure that I'll be loving you always. Now timely. Two for Tuesday continues. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. And that's the great Stevie Wonder. And you can see Great Moments in Vinyl performing Stevie Wonder this Saturday night at Martyrs. It's going to be great. Who requested the Stevie Wonder?
That's coming to us from John, and that's a request for Tabitha. Go that to Tabitha.
Okay, there you go. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're going to talk about live albums. What are some of the best live albums? And I was inspired by this because there's this show on Access TV called Top 10 Revealed. And it's like, you know how VH1 used to just have like that, all those, well, we've had, the talking head shows.
Oh, yeah, like Best Week Ever with
Best Week Ever.
Yeah.
Well, this is kind of like that, but it's a different list every week. It's on Sunday night, so I tape it, and I usually watch it on Monday morning. And this week, and they talk to musicians, and they talk to people, celebrities, and stuff like that. And this week, it was the 10 best live albums of all time. And so that's what they did. They counted those down, and I was like, you know, that's a fun topic. We should get into that. So we will. But right now, speaking of music, we are listening to some music backwards. Because some of these artists... have put messages in their music, and when you play it backwards, those messages pop up. Some of them make sense, some of them don't. Like Cheap Trick is not going to put, you know, that Satan holds the key to the lock in one of their songs. So we got some texts here. 847 area code says, "Hi Nick, not sure if this counts, but Metallica Enter Sandman sounds the exact same in reverse." Does it?
Might have to test that.
218 area code says, "Nick, my job is to watch a construction site by myself for the next 4 hours. Yes, I am officially freaking out. I'm sorry."
I'm sure you're fine.
Oh, man. 773 area code says, "Yep, a little unsettled. I sleep with the radio on, and this is what I woke up, to.
Yeah, nothing like waking up at 2:30 in here and see you in hell.
Yeah. 419 area code says, "If you played Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon in the movie The Wizard of Oz at the same time, it plays out together." It's pretty unsettling. Have you ever done that?
Yeah, I did. It is kind of strange.
It is strange. It's synced up pretty good. I guess it's like you're supposed to put on Dark Side during the second growl of the MGM lion. That's when you're supposed to start it to get it the most synced up. And it's weird, too, because, I mean, it does, it's a little unsettling. Because it really does hook up. It really does sync up pretty well. That's another thing that college students did. They just blow a bunch of weed and do that. Man, let's watch Wizard of Oz and put on Dark Side of the Moon, man.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at an article here claims this, the roar for the third time.
The third time, okay.
Because you start playing the CD, and then once it starts to actually play, you kind of like leave it there for a second. And then when he roars for the third time, you go, and then just gets super weird from there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's still a thing. People still do that. I remember when that story, when that whole thing broke years ago, everybody's like, oh, man, it's so weird. And they've asked people from Floyd, and they're like, I don't know, we didn't do it on purpose.
Just happened that way.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried doing different movies with other albums? You know, like try to mix and match, see what can work? Yeah, it doesn't, most of the time it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, I don't think I've ever done that. I mean, I did the Wizard of Oz thing only because it was a thing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like, because I'm not a fan of the Wizard of Oz, by the way. As we've discussed this on the show, I don't like that movie. So I don't voluntarily watch the Wizard of Oz, like, any time.
But if you do it with Pink Floyd.
Well, this is the one time I did with Floyd. All right. You happen to be wearing a Slayer hat.
Yeah, that's true.
In the next song, I'm sure this will be really happy for the construction site person. The next one is Hell Awaits by Slayer from 1985. Vocalist Tom Araya, is that how you pronounce his name?
I've always said Araya.
Okay, Araya.
He's Chilean.
Has admitted to opening their sophomore album with reversed voices chanting Join Us 45 times. Before culminating with Welcome Back. But he claims the satanic imagery on the album art was solely for effect and not for genuine Satan summoning. All right, so he's just gonna, I don't want to hear him say it 45 times. He's going to say Join Us, right? I don't want to hear it. I'm sure the listeners don't want to hear it 45 times either. So let's hear it a little bit.
Join us.
All right. I wouldn't put it past these guys to do that, knowing Slayer.
Yeah, it's very on brand.
Yeah. Here's another weird one. We had Cheap Trick. Now what? Electric Light Orchestra? ELO? This is El Dorado, the song El Dorado by Electric Light Orchestra from 1974. The title cut of ELO's 1974 album is believed to contain the very specific message, "He is the nasty one. Christ, you're infernal. It is said we're dead men. Everyone has the mark with everyone who has the mark will live." What?
Who would have thought? Jeff Lynne.
Songwriter and lead vocalist Jeff Lynne didn't take kindly to the devil-worshipping rumors, calling it nonsense. In addition to denials, he slipped intentional backwards masking messages into future songs. One favorite comes from Fire on High, in which it appears to say, "The music is reversible, but time is not. Turn back, turn back, turn back, turn back." Well, you know, Jeff Lynne messes around a lot in the studio. I mean, he's a consummate producer and known for layering a bunch of stuff. I mean, if you listen to an ELO record or you listen to any of the other artists that he's produced over the years, they're pretty snazzy sounding records. Like he is a whiz in the studio. So I wouldn't put it past him to layer in some stuff or put in some sort of weird message. Now, what's he supposed to say?
So
he is the nasty one? Is that what this is supposed to be?
Yeah, he is the nasty one. Christ, you're infernal. All this like weird, weird, weird gothic satanic stuff.
All right. From Jeff Lynne. Here we go.
Nasty one, Christ, you're infernal. You're listening.
Okay. Sounds like something. Not quite sure what.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Okay. What is this? Dark Thorn. What is this? Do you know this?
I believe this is of the Norwegian death metal scene.
Oh, good.
So you know it's family-friendly stuff.
Norwegian death metal Darkthorn was known raising the bar and being hardcore, so it's probably not shocking that this album cut features bat-masked lyrics that say, "In the name of God, let the churches burn." What? The song was written by the notorious Varg Vikernes, who later went to prison for murder. And fittingly, several counts of church arson. Should we be playing this?
Yeah, I mean, I can't even hear the back.
No, then we're not going to play that. I don't want to hear that. Jeez.
They did make a movie about, like, that involves that Varg guy that came out, Lords of Chaos, with youngest Culkin.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And they're just like, this guy was crazy. This guy was off his head.
Nuts. All right. Now, our next, boy, these next artists are fantastic. We had Darkthorn. Okay. And the next band is called Cradle of Filth. What's happening right now? What is going on? This is Dinner at the Deviant's Palace. The song is called Dinner at the Deviant's Palace. by the band Cradle of Filth. The underlying drone of gibberish within the song is actually the Lord's Prayer recited backwards, which is commonly employed to summon demons. I don't think we need to hear that either.
Nah.
I'm sure the construction guy's real happy that we've skipped these past two. The guy that's on the construction site by himself at 3 o'clock in the morning. How do you... Dinner at the Deviant's Palace.
These guys are they're total wieners. They're not as hardcore as they think they are.
Cradle of Filth.
Cradle of Filth.
Yeah, man, Cradle of Filth. Think of the stupidest name you could possibly think of. Yeah, let's call the band Cradle of Filth. Morons. All right, Styx.
Oh boy.
Snowblind by Styx. 1981. I didn't even know they had a song. The only Snowblind that I know is by Sabbath. Both the California State Legislature and aforementioned PMRC insisted that these Styx lyrics contain satanic backwards messages. Specifically, the line, "I try so hard to make it so," was said to be "Satan move through our voice" when played in reverse. Many felt the comparison was merely coincidental. The organization used it as one of their prime examples while lobbying for stricter music warning labels. Styx? Really? The subversive sounds of Styx? Because, you know, that Mr. Roboto, that's an evil song. So do we have this one?
Yeah, here's a little bit of it. This is, again, a little bit of a stretch.
All right.
I try so hard to make it so, stick and move, star voice. Stick and move, star voice.
No.
I don't think the guys behind Come Sail Away
were
exactly trying to scare too many people.
Come on, man. We've got a few more of these that we're going to get to, but let's take a break right now, and we'll come back and wrap up this topic, and then we're going to talk about the best live albums. And if you guys want to jump in for live albums or any of this kind of stuff, jump in now. Talk or text at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and also coming up, the news is next, right, from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. We've been talking about backwards messages in songs. And now, of course, we're going to get to the Beatles, who like to fool around. And so the White Album by the Beatles Technically, the first sinister message to appear in the Fab Four track is the fade-out on Strawberry Fields Forever, in which John Lennon seems to say, "I buried Paul." This was part of the infamous Paul is Dead conspiracy, which claims that Paul McCartney was killed in a brutal car crash in 1966 and secretly replaced with a double. According to the theory, the surviving members placed clues in their music and album art in order to tell the true fans what had happened. So, actually, "I buried Paul," he says, "cranberry sauce." That's what he says at the end of Strawberry Fields Forever. So, because why not? Why not just say cranberry sauce? Clues were supposedly littered throughout their Sgt. Pepper and Magical Mystery Tour albums. And 1968's so-called White Album had the mother load. The gibberish spoken by John at the end of "I'm So Tired" is heard by some as "Paul is a dead man, miss him, miss him, miss him." But the freakiest message of all occurs near the very end of the record on the notorious avant-garde college sound collage, Revolution No. 9. An engineer's droning voice intones number 9 throughout the plus-size track. When it's played in reverse, it appears to say, "Turn me on, dead man." Yeah, now these are ones that I had listened to, because the Beatles, you know, this whole "Paul is dead" thing I find reasonably hilarious, and I know that, you know, some of it was coincidental, but some of it, you know, the band did it on purpose in order to stoke the fire of the whole "Paul is dead" thing. They clearly had some fun with it. But yeah, at the end. Now, which one do we have?
So I've got a little bit of the "I'm So Tired" played backwards.
Okay, this is "I'm So Tired" played backwards. "Paul is a dead man. Miss him. Miss him. Miss him" is what they're saying in order to just keep this stupid "Paul is dead" thing alive. There it is. That's ultra clear to me.
That's the thing about these. They're all so ridiculous. They're all so insane.
Now, this the number 9, I've done this one a million times. This one I've, number 9? Number 9? And you have a very strong connection with that song.
Good Lord.
Revolution No. 9 is a completely insane thing. And you had to listen to it how many times?
I had to listen to it for at least an hour and a half, 2 hours on repeat.
All right, and this was part of hazing at a fraternity.
Yeah.
So part of the thing that they did to you was they made you listen to Revolution No. 9 for over an hour and a half.
Yes.
That's extreme torture.
I know. It was weird. I started, like, you get into a weird state of mind when you've had to listen to that over and over again for like nearly 2 hours.
Now, did they play it backwards at all for you?
Nope, just forward. Okay. And then at the end of it, they played a clip from Deliverance just to scare us.
Very good.
Yeah. Totally, totally sane people.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Okay, so this is number 9, Revolution No. 9, and it's supposed to say, "Turn me on, dead man."
Number 9.
Yeah, it's odd because Revolution No. 9 pretty much sounds the same forward or backward.
Yeah, no.
all right. Okay, so here's the deal. This one, "Stairway to Heaven" by Zeppelin. This is the legendary one. Perhaps the most famous hidden message of them all, the connection with guitarist Jimmy Page and the occult goes way back. He bought famed Satanists Aleister Crowley's mansion, and rumors persist to this day that he sold his soul to the devil in exchange for fame. In the early 1980s, evangelical broadcaster Paul Crouch leveled accusations at several notable bands that snuck evil hidden messages into their music. He mentioned, "If there's a bustle in your head grow, segment in the Zeppelin masterpiece, which appears to say, "Oh, here's to my sweet Satan, the one whose little path would make me sad, whose power is Satan, who will give those with him 666. What?
I know. It doesn't make any sense.
Only turntables, they declined to comment at the time, but Swan Song Records issued a statement reading, "Our turntables only play one direction, forwards." Several years later, Page did weigh in to Musician Magazine on the matter. "It's to me very sad because Stairway to Heaven was written with every best intention. As far as making reversing tapes and putting messages in the end, that's not my idea of making music." All right, so let's listen to a little bit of this. I remember this one. I used to listen to this. Like at one point he says, "My Sweet Satan" or something, or it sounds like it. Here.
It's my sweet Satan.
See, right there. Yeah.
It's just total coincidence.
Yeah. Okay. 665 by Soundgarden from 1988. It seems like lead singer Chris Cornell didn't get the Satan memo, or else he just misread it. "That's the only way to explain his ode to Santa. Lines like, 'Santa, I love you, baby. Mr. Christmas King, Santa, you're my king. I love you, Santa, baby. Got what I need,' appear throughout the song." So instead of Satan, Chris Cornell decided that he was going to backwards mask a message to Santa. Let's listen to this.
He's clearly making fun of the whole thing.
Clearly.
My Christmas king.
Yeah, my Christmas king. Yeah, you gotta love Chris Cornell, man. I miss that dude. So to wrap this up, there's a Christian rock band. They hit a C64 program on a vinyl album in 1984. This is an absolutely bizarre discovery, thanks to dedicated reader Paul W. To perk up your Sunday morning, 35 years ago, a Christian rock band encoded a Commodore 64 program on a vinyl album, and a YouTuber managed to retrieve it. The album is Electric Eye by the band Prodigal. They hid the program in a runout groove, which also has a C64 and other things etched onto it. And sure enough, 8-Bit Show and Tell managed to record the analog audio for the program, transfer it to a magnetic cassette, and load it. So it was a simple, basic program containing quotes from Albert Einstein and Jesus. But they did. They put a C64 program in a vinyl album. So talk about hidden messages. There they are. All right, let's break. The news is coming up next, and we're going to talk about the best live albums ever right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Two for Tuesday continues. You've been two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. What was that?
So that was Can't Go Back by Fleetwood Mac from Mirage, and that's coming to us from Greg H.
There we go. Okay, welcome back, everybody. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Tuesday morning. Continuing music, talk about music. We want to talk about some of the best live albums of all time. Some of the greatest live albums of ever. And they did a show. There's a show, like I mentioned before. It's on Access TV. It's called Top 10 Revealed. And they chose live albums to talk about the best live albums. And the first one that pops into my head, and I don't even know because I'm looking at, I have a list here from Rolling Stone. They chose 50 albums, and I haven't looked through the whole list, but it would be ridiculous if the one that I'm about to mention was not on this list. But I'd have to, like, check through the whole thing. UFO, Strangers in the Night, is one of the greatest live albums ever recorded. if not the greatest. And I've told this story before. I could have been there. It was recorded at the Chicago Amphitheater. And I had like 104 fever or something. So my parents were like, you're not going. But I had a ticket and I couldn't use it. And so, you know, every time I hear that album, I was like, I'm always like, man, I could have been there, man. I could
that
have seen,
close.
I could have seen that show. I didn't care if I had pneumonia. I wanted to go, but I couldn't. Anyway, so that's one of the greatest live albums of all time. That one pops up as soon as I, you know, as soon as you mentioned like great live records. That's one of the first ones that that pops up into my mind. But what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. Do you like live albums, Tom?
Yeah, I do. But they can run the gamut of being amazing to pretty bad. There are some live albums out there that are just kind of pointless.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to get right.
Yeah, and they were a much bigger thing. Well, I mean, now everybody, you know, records everything. And, you know, lots of bands allow people to just set up and record, and stuff like Dave does that too. I mean, I've got like 9,000 live Dave shows. But speaking of live records, one of my favorite live albums ever is Dave Matthews and Tim Reynolds live at Luther College, which is one of my favorite things ever in the world. And that's a sanctioned, you know, legal live album. Do you remember when Pearl Jam released about 90 of them?
Yeah. I mean, I was even looking the other day because I was like, I kind of want to get into Pearl Jam live. Like I've liked a lot of the live cuts I've heard, and when I've seen them, gotten to see them live, they're incredible.
Well, that's their forte, man.
Oh,
that's their strength. Well, are their shows. Their concerts are unbelievable.
Yeah, I never would have guessed that they would have gone down this route, though.
Yeah.
You know, just starting out as part of the grunge movement, now they're kind of more in the jam band category,
right,
even though they're not playing that type of music. But you can literally get, like, an entire tour, like, box.
Yeah.
And it's every single show on the tour. And trust me, I love Pearl Jam just as much as the next guy, but who would buy that?
Yeah. Hardcore fans would.
Hearing, oh man, the way that they played Corduroy this time is different than when they played it back in Tulsa. You know, that right, is really beyond my level.
I remember when there was just, I remember when we used to have right across the river here, it was a Forever 21, now it's closed, but that used to be Virgin Megastore. That used to be a Virgin Megastore. And it was, I can't tell you, you know, working, basically when we were in the Trib building, working across the street, down the block from this Virgin Megastore, if I had time to kill before a movie or before a shift at work, I can't tell you the amount of time I spent in that place and the amount of money. But I remember going to the Virgin Megastore and seeing what was essentially just an entire display of those Pearl Jam. And they were in very simple, like brown, you know, like brown,
yeah, like cardboard
almost, yeah. And yeah, you'd go through them, look at them, see what the set lists are. I bought like four or five of them, but you had to go through like the set list to see which ones had the best set lists and stuff. And they sounded good. You know, it was professional quality live recording.
Well, once they started like hiring people to do it and get it straight from the board, if you can get it straight from the board, then you're getting about as good as you're going to get.
Right. True. All right, so let's see. We've got some live albums here. So the first one that always pops up into my head, as I've said before, is UFO, Strangers in the Night, which I consider to be maybe the best live album of all time. And then right on its heels, maybe, you know, Catch Me on a Different Day, Cheap Trick at Budokan. Cheap Trick at Budokan is a legendary record. Was the biggest, because they, you know, before Budokan, Cheap Trick was not selling a lot of records. You know, they had a passionate but small following. And, you know, they didn't sell millions of records or anything like that. They weren't considered, you know, a big, popular, you know, top 10, top 5 band. But that all changed when Budokan came out. And they weren't even going to release it in the States. Like, you know, it was only going to be released overseas and in Japan, obviously, but they decided at the last minute, you know, it started to get some traction. And then when I Want You to Want Me came out as a single, when they released that as a single, the album went through the roof. And deservedly so, because Cheap Trick at Budokan is a legendary live record.
I don't think I've ever heard the studio version of I Want You to Want Me.
You haven't?
No. I think anytime it's ever popped up, when I was growing up, if it was on classic rock radio, they were playing the Budokan version.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the single. They released that. I mean, that became like a, you know, like a top five single when they released that. And then all the songs on that record, the live versions of them, all of them are great. It's an incredible record. And they had a huge following, obviously, in Japan. Huge. And you could tell, I mean, the crowd's going nuts. If you hear the, you know, when you listen to Cheap Trick at Budokan, you can hear that basically feel the energy from that crowd. Big crowd, enthusiastic crowd, loud crowd, chanting, singing. And again, they did not have that kind of following in America at all. We knew them more because, you know, they're local, because we knew they were from Rockford. So, like, people from Chicago knew who Cheap Trick was and liked Cheap Trick a lot, as you should, because they're one of the greatest bands of all time. But nationwide, worldwide, you know, nationwide, they weren't doing all that well. They were doing okay in overseas, but they were huge in Japan. Huge. But man, when Budokan came out, forget it. It was just, you know.
And on the flip side, Bob Dylan at Budokan is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and by the way, same venue for Deep Purple Made in Japan. That was in Budokan too. That's the many live albums were recorded. And that's another classic live album, Made in Japan. Classic. The live version of Smoke on the Water. Well, all the live, all that whole album is great.
It's bonkers.
Great. Here's Sue on WG. Hi, Susan.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I called because I wanted to agree with you 100% about the UFO, Strangers in the Night.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to see them at a very small venue you might know of, the Hammond Civic Center in Indiana.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. And it was pure ice that night. Nobody was out. You couldn't drive. I wound up putting my car in the front of a house night on the way home. But they were absolutely fantastic, and that whole album is excellent. And as far as I'm concerned, he is an outstanding guitar player.
Oh, he's Michael Schenker. Top. Michael Schenker is one of the best. Yeah. He's one of the best guitarists of all time. Yeah. Yeah, it just kills me that I actually had a ticket for that show and I didn't go.
You know what? I hear you loud and clear on that, and that happened to me for Judas Priest.
Ah. All right, Susan.
I was sick. Okay.
Thanks, Susan.
Thanks. You have a great night.
We're going to echoing some UFO love there. Strangers in the Night.
Shout out for Priest, man. Go, Susan.
Yeah. Oh, we got a ton of texts that are coming in. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Let's see. 262 area code says, you have to listen to animals while watching the TV show Manimal.
All right. Well done.
Manimal. Can you find Manimal anywhere on...
Oh, yeah, get the complete series on DVD.
No.
Yeah.
Of Manimal?
Of Manimal, yeah. Shout Factory put it out.
Oh, of course they did. 419 area code, Bob Seger's Live Bullet. And Johnny Cash's Folsom Prison. The Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison is legendary. Legendary. Great live album. Not a big Bob Seger guy. I like Bob Seger. But yeah, I mean, that was a big record. I'm not the biggest Bob Seger fan in the world, but that, man, oh man, that Live Bullet record was everywhere. And the live versions of all these songs, especially Turn the Page is just a legendary live song. Yeah, Live Bullet, that was big. I was in high school when that record came out, and everybody had it. So that's right there, right up there at the top of the list. All right. All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back. We got some lines open if you want to jump in. If you want to send some texts, you can do that, too. More text, more live albums to talk about. What are the best live albums of all time? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Yeah, last week we were celebrating the 40th anniversary of Tusk and talking about Fleetwood Mac. And we're back. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're talking about live albums. What are your favorite live albums? What are some of the best? And we got Rolling Stone's list of the 50 best live albums of all time. And we got a whole bunch of texts and some people are calling in. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 815 area code says Frampton Comes Alive because, as Mike Myers says in Wayne's World, if you lived in the suburbs in the 70s, you were issued it. I think I owned it for that reason. Everybody had that record in the 70s. Everybody had that record. It was just like Fleetwood Mac Rumors. That was another one that everybody had. Yeah, Frampton Comes Alive, a classic album. No question about it. 262 area code says One More from the Road by Lynyrd Skynyrd is my favorite. It does have like a 19-minute version of Freebird on it. That's a terrific. You know, I got to see those guys live before the plane crash.
Oh man, are you serious?
Yeah,
yeah. I was never huge into like the Southern rock thing, except for Lynyrd Skynyrd. They're just so much fun.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, it's, you know. It was a tragic story. I mean, I saw them at Soldier Field. It was Skynyrd and Nugent. I don't know how this happened, but Nugent headlined. Skynyrd was before Nugent. 38 Special was on the bill too. That was before they were even popular. I can't remember who else was on that bill, but it was one of those outdoor shows at the. In the 70s, they had all these outdoor shows in the 70s. They would have it at Comiskey. They would do some at Comiskey, and they would call it the World Series of Rock. And then, like, the ones at Soldier Field were the Super Bowl of Rock.
No Stanley Cup of Rock?
No. But, yeah, so they had the Super Bowl of Rock, and that was one of the times I went. Was Nugent and Skynyrd, and it was literally like 3 weeks before the plane crash.
That's wild.
Yeah, that was the only time I ever saw him. I didn't see him in any other incarnation. That's the only time I ever saw Nugent. Never saw him with the Buffalo. You didn't think I was going to come out on an effing Buffalo, Nugent. All right, live albums is what we're talking about. Hey, Nick, how about Neil Diamond's Hot August Night? Yeah, man. The concert for Bangladesh? Yeah, I guess I didn't even think about Woodstock. Stuff like that, not just one artist, but a compilation of artists. Yeah, that's another angle. I didn't even think about that one, concert for Bangladesh. Peter Frampton's Frampton Comes Alive, as we mentioned already. Let's see. Here's Ron, the millwright. Hi, Ron.
Hey, what's up, Nick?
Hey.
Hey, I just wanted to throw out Stop Making Sense.
Oh, yeah.
Talking Head. That is, I was telling Tom, I'm late to the game on discovering that album, but that is best, by far one of the best live albums I've ever heard, and the best rendition of Take Me to the River. Ever.
No, it's a great album, and not only that, it's the best concert movie ever made.
I have only seen the last 5 minutes of it. I don't have it, and I'm not really big on the whole, you know, I could just go online and watch it. I want to find it and rent it or buy it.
Well, if you like the album, you'll love the movie, obviously. So,
oh, I'm sure I will.
All right, thanks, Ron.
All right, yeah, man.
Take care.
Good night.
Yeah, you too. Yeah, Stop Making Sense. The Talking Heads. I can't tell you the number of times I saw that movie at the Fine Arts. It played at the Fine Arts. I think it's the best concert movie ever made. And yeah, we saw that movie. God, man, oh man. It was like every other It was like every other week we would be down there, you know, seeing Stop Making Sense. Saw it, oh, so many times. All right, here's Ken on WGN. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Good evening.
Hi.
Hey, am I wrong about this, or did not the Rolling Stones invent the 20,000 seat concert in 1969 on the Get Your Ya-Ya's Out tour?
I don't know, but that's one of the greatest live albums of all time, Get Your Ya-Ya's Out. That is an unbelievable live album.
And that's where the basketball stadium and the hockey concert came from, is from that tour. That's where it started.
Yeah.
That's the reason I called you, is to remind you of that.
All right. All right, Ken, thanks.
Have a great one.
All right, take care. Yeah, Get Your Ya-Ya's Out. Phenomenal. Midnight Rambler? That version of Midnight Rambler from Get Your Ya-Ya's Out? Come on now. So great. Let's see. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Nick. This was in the early 80s album. It was me and my friend's party record, Pat Travers Band Live, Go For What You Know.
Yeah.
It was like rock and roll blues. You never had a good studio effort, but this live album was just great.
It was. Yeah, that's a great Pat Travers Band. That's a fantastic album. Yeah.
And by the way, the Super Bowl of Rock you were talking about, Point Blank was the opener.
Oh, okay. All right. I don't remember that because it was a long time ago.
Yeah, but I don't know why I did, but
yeah. Okay.
Well, it was weird. Nugent and three Southern rock bands. Yeah.
Yeah, very strange. Okay, thank you, Steve.
All right, thanks.
Yep. Got more texts here. We're talking live albums here. I got the list here from Rolling Stone magazine, and we want to hear more from you guys. 608 area code says, "Hey, Nick, I know you hate the Eagles, and I hope the therapy is helping, but the Hell Freezes Over album and concert are awesome." Yeah, I hate the Eagles. You can talk all you want about how great it is. I can't stand the Eagles. I hate that band. Let's see. 765 says, "Live Bullet by Bob Seger." At the Fillmore East, the Allman Brothers Band, legendary. Live at Fillmore, 71, Humble Pie. Stage, David Bowie. 773 area code, The Who, Live at Leeds. That's one of the loudest albums ever. That is just a relentlessly loud record, Live at Leeds. And it's awesome. But you're going to put that on, you're going to bust up some eardrums. Hey, Nick and crew, my favorite live album is The Song Remains the Same by Led Zeppelin. Great show, Nick and Tom. Thank you. Wish I could say this. I felt the same about Song Remains the Same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's some tough moments on that one.
The thing about Zeppelin was you never knew what you were going to get. I saw them in 75, and they were unbelievably great. And then I saw them in 77, and they sucked. They were terrible. Everybody on that stage was loaded except for John Paul Jones. Seemed to be the only professional in the band at that time. They were loaded. Page did most of the show from a folding chair. Terrible. And that 77 tour was notorious for how bad it was. So, but they were great in 75. You just never knew what you were going to. It's like going to see the Mats. You never know, you know. Well, now they're sober. But I've seen the Replacements. Sometimes they were horrendous and drunk and barely standing up, and the other times it's some of the best live stuff I've ever seen in my life. And you just never know what you were going to get. You never know what Westerberg you were going to get.
Sometimes you got to roll the dice.
Exactly. And listen, when the Replacements are at the top of their game, very few bands are better. So yeah, it's a risk, but it's a risk worth taking because they're so good. All right, let's take a break here. We got the news coming up next, and then we're going to talk more live albums here. What are your favorite live albums? 312-981-7200. Coming up right after the news.
How can I try to explain? When I do, he turns away again. It's always been the same, same old story. From the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know.
I love Cat Stevens. unapologetically love Cat Stevens. That is a great song. Who requested the Cat Stevens?
So the Cat Stevens is coming to us from Paul.
Yeah. Love him. You know, and if you weren't around in the early to mid-70s, he was massive. Like, everywhere. All over the radio, hit after hit after hit. Huge. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're talking music this morning. And if you want to jump in, we would love to hear from you. Rolling Stone put together their list of the greatest live albums of all time. And we've been talking about live albums. What are some of your favorites? Which ones do you listen to? So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So let's see. For Rolling Stone, number coming in at number 50 is The Replacements with their 1985 live album that I can't say the title of on the radio. Yeah. So you know, that's another. Again, we mentioned The Replacements before the break, and they were such a great live band. Again, sometimes they weren't, but. Have you ever seen their, I don't know if it gets broadcast very often or if it has, I don't think it, no, maybe it hasn't. Do you ever see their performance on SNL?
Yeah. I think you and I, you might have told me to look it up one time because I love bad SNL performances. I think they're great. My favorite is personally the Red Hot Chili Peppers when John Frusciante was too strung out to actually play and he was just like messing with them.
I don't even remember.
Oh, it was back like when they blew up with Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
Yeah.
That back in like 91, 92. But yeah. that Replacements one is absurd.
Oh, the Replacements, it's crazy. Somebody described it. One of my friends described their performance as they were performing as though they were being chased. That's how he described it. So. They were a fun live band, though, man. When they were on, nobody was better. Here's a good one. Little Feat. Waiting for Columbus. Also one of my favorite album covers. Little Feat. They were a weird band, Little Feat. But there's a song on Waiting for Columbus called... All That You Dream, which is one of my favorite songs ever. And the live version of All That You Dream on Waiting for Columbus is just great. It's it's one of those cases where, like we were saying about Cheap Trick, where, you know, the live version of I Want You to Want Me is preferred over the studio version. That song All That You Dream by Little Feat, it's also on the soundtrack to a great movie called Over the Edge. You ever see that movie, Tom? Over the Edge? Matt Dillon's first movie? Oh, man. Uh-huh. You got to see it. I was 13 when it came out. 14. I was 14 when it came out, and it's about a bunch of 14-year-olds who lock up all the parents in a school and burn everything down.
Oh, wait, I've heard of this.
It's a great movie with one of the best soundtracks ever. One of the greatest soundtracks ever. It opens with Speak Now or Forever Hold Your Peace by Cheap Trick. That's how the movie opens.
And that's Matt Dillon's first movie?
Matt Dillon's first movie,
That's awesome.
Yeah. It is a great... Jonathan Kaplan directed that movie, and it was one of those movies that, you know... I was 14 when I saw it, and I did not have a troubled... You know, I didn't have a troubled... home, but like the themes of that movie resonated because I was a 14-year-old boy. That was the same summer as Phantasm. That was a good summer for 14-year-old boys in movies.
Yeah. Oh my god. I'm just looking at the soundtrack now.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Surrender, Best Friend's Girl, You Really Got Me. Teenage Lobotomy by the Ramones.
Yeah. Ooh Child is on there.
Carter.
All That We Dream by Little Feat. Not a classic album, a classic soundtrack, and a great, great movie. Yeah, that was one of those movies that kind of slid under the radar. Not a lot of people saw it, but I will say this. It was embraced by critics. I remember Siskel and Ebert really went to bat for it. And it has aged beautifully. Like, people, there are now lots of fans of the movie Over the Edge. Some people were sucked in by the soundtrack, and then, you know, learned about the movie. But yeah, no, it's a great one. All right, how about this? Donny Hathaway live from 1972. Yeah. Considered one of the best. Boogie Down Productions, live hardcore worldwide from 1991. I'm not familiar with that one. I'm familiar with Boogie Down Productions. I'm not familiar with that specific recording. Here's a great one. A great live album. Thin Lizzy, Live and Dangerous. Fantastic. In 1978, the Red Hot Thin Lizzy decided that they wanted to work with producer Tom Visconti, who had made his name working with fellow glam travelers David Bowie and T-Rex. Time was tight, so a live album was in order. Live and Dangerous was the snarling result, a document of a band that took no prisoners, even on mellower tracks like Dancing in the Moonlight. How exactly the Irish outfit came to be captured so effectively is still in dispute. Visconti has asserted that 75% of Dangerous was recorded in the studio in order to smooth out the rough spots, but the band vehemently disagrees. "We are a very loud band," guitarist Brian Robertson told Guitar Player in 2012. "Me being the loudest of all of us, so how are you going to replace my guitar when it's so loud that it's going to bleed over all of the and the bloody drum kit?" It's a great live album. All right. We got another one here. Thin Lizzy. Another vote for Thin Lizzy.
Good old Thin Lizzy.
Yep. You know the first thing I did when I got to Dublin?
You got to go to the statue.
Went to the statue. First thing. Like, I don't care about anything else. I have to go to Phil Lynott's statue now.
Here you are in one of the most storied cities in the British Isles.
Straight to Phil Lynott. Straight to the brass Phil Lynott. That's what I did.
There you go.
Mike in L.A. says, go Hawks. All right. A Kings fan?
Smart man.
Okay. Hey, Nick, McCartney's Wings Over America is good from their 76 tour. It's great. That's a triple album, too. That's a lot of wings. That's a triple album. You get your money's worth on that one. Tim says MTV's Nirvana Unplugged. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's spectacular. Many of Cobain's vocals are phenomenal. That's a great document about to capture what was amazing about Kurt Cobain. When he pulled out the Bowie song.
Man Who Sold the World.
Oh, man.
It's next level.
Such a great document, though. It really is. I've seen that. I've seen the Unplugged like 900 times. The video of it. So it's so good.
And even Chris Novoselic and Dave Grohl are just they're just laying it down.
Oh yeah, no, it's great all the way around. Okay. I mean, obviously it's Cobain's showcase.
Sure.
But it's a great document of what that band was, even when they, you know, cuz I mean they were even cuz they were a loud band, obviously. But toned down like that acoustically, beautiful.
Yeah, I'd throw out Nirvana Live at Reading.
It's yeah, just,
it's
that's
just
great.
A bonkers performance because he comes out. That's when he comes out in the straitjacket.
Yeah. Yeah. 224 area code says, you knew you were going to get when Jimmy Page played live with the Black Crowes. He was sober and it was amazing.
Yeah, live at the Greek Theater.
Yeah. Black Crowes, a great live band.
Mm-hmm.
When they're not punching each other in the face. You remember when they toured with Oasis?
Yeah.
And it was called the Brotherly Love Tour. You got to love that, man.
They know their audience. You know?
They should have had the Kinks with them. Make it a triple bill of brothers who want to beat the crap out of each other.
And every show ends in just a full-on brawl.
Yeah. One of my favorite things was Liam who didn't show up to a gig. And so Noel had to play by himself. And then Liam shows up drunk in the balcony to heckle his brother.
Yeah, he's just up there just sucking down cigarettes and literally yelling.
He's screaming at him. He's drinking Heineken, smoking cigarettes, and yelling at his brother at a gig that he was supposed to be at.
And if you ask me, honestly, I've always thought Noel was the better singer. Liam is distinct, but I've always thought Noel was better.
Nobody stands at a microphone quite like Liam, though.
Like, yeah, like hands behind his back. Just like,
and the mic is way up.
Yeah.
Above his head.
Sunshine.
Yeah.
The big dumb glasses.
Yeah. And here's a classic live album. Motorhead, No Sleep Till Hammersmith. Please. You ever see Motorhead?
No.
Oh, man.
It's one of my greatest regrets in life.
Well, you know the greatest regret I have of a concert that I missed in the 70s, right?
Well, Queen.
Queen and Thin Lizzy opening.
Yeah, Queen and Thin Lizzy. Oh, my God.
Can you even imagine that?
People would have been going ballistic.
Could you imagine that? Thin Lizzy opening for Queen. I don't even know where to begin. My God. Anyway, missed that show. All right, we got more live albums to talk about here. And we got some great ones, too. So if you want to jump in, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text.
Oh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. It's hard to get by just upon a smile. Oh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. I'll always remember you.
Ah, yeah. All right, welcome back, everybody. Cat Stevens here on 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. We were talking about live albums. What are the best live albums of all time? And we are about to reach another entry here for the Rolling Stone magazine, and they put in U2 Under Blood Red Sky from 1983, which is great. I think Under Blood Red Sky was the album that really kind of broke U2. I mean, obviously Joshua Tree put them through the ceiling, but I think they broke through to a different audience when Under Blood Red Sky came out. And, you know, the live version from Red Rocks of Sunday Bloody Sunday, the live version of Sunday Bloody Sunday is just, you know, legendary. So, and they're great live.
Yeah, I still haven't seen them.
They're great.
I just, those ticket prices, man.
Yeah, I understand. I can totally understand that. But it's, you got to see U2 at least. You got to see them at least once. I mean, I've seen them a bunch of times. And the first time I saw them was for Unforgettable Fire in 84.
See, that would be so, like, I'm a really big fan of the 80s and early 90s output, pretty much up to Achtung Baby, and then everything else after that is kind of hit or miss.
Well, I think Achtung Baby is their best album. I think Achtung Baby is unbelievable. That's my favorite U2 album. I mean, you know, I like it better than Joshua Tree. Everybody, you know, talks about Joshua Tree being their, you know, but the album that they put out the album that they put out in 2004? No, 1.
2001. Oh, All That You Can't Leave Behind.
Oh, man, that's a great record.
Got Elevation on it.
Beautiful Day.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite U2 song of all time. But they were great on the Vertigo tour too.
Yeah. I would just go and be like, oh man, how much of No Line on the Horizon and Songs of Innocence might I have to sit through?
Yeah. I don't think those albums are that bad. I don't. I like them, you know? But when you see U2, you're going to hear the stuff. You're going to hear the good stuff.
Yeah. But there's just some cuts off of Unforgettable Fire, that some of the deeper cuts that are just so, they're like almost a punk band at some point.
Well,
you know,
I mean, it's like, whenever you see U2, the centerpiece, and I'm not kidding, the centerpiece song is always Bullet the Blue Sky. That's the one. And it's loud, man. And it's you know, it's aggressive. And Bullet the Blue Sky is a phenomenal song.
No doubt.
But that's the one. They play it every show. They play Bullet. You're going to hear Bullet the Blue Sky every show, and it's always going to be one of the highlights of the show, without question.
My favorite U2 song is New Year's Day.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, because that bass line just won't quit.
I remember going to the kickoff of the Synchronicity Tour, the Police Synchronicity Tour at Comiskey Park, the old Comiskey. And the lineup that day was Ministry, when Ministry sounded like Depeche Mode, that when my friend Joe liked them. Hey, listen, what the hell happened after that first album? So it was Ministry, it was The Fix, it was Flock of Seagulls, Joan Jett, and The Police. And Joan Jett got booted off the stage because everything else was new wavy. So she didn't, because Joan Jett rules the planet, but like she didn't kind of fit in with the bill. I mean, that's an unusual, it's unusual to have Joan Jett on that,
yeah,
on that, no, bill with The Fix, Flock of Seagulls, Ministry. But anyway, in between bands, because it was an all-day thing, obviously. There were five bands. We were at Comiskey. We were there all day. And it was the very first show on the Synchronicity Tour for The Police. And I saw them on that tour, I think, five times on that tour, on the Synchronicity Tour, because they were on the road for over a year. I saw them like five times, easily. But anyway, they had video, you know, video scoreboard or video boards up, you know, screens up, so that people who were sitting, you know, up in the bleachers or all the way in the back, away from the stage, could obviously see. I mean, this is a common thing in outdoor concerts in big venues where they put up the big screen so that everybody can see. So they had these video screens, and in between bands, they would play videos. And I remember they played the video for New Year's Day. And it got, like, applause. Like, people went nuts. And that was, like, right when New Year's Day came out and U2 was starting to roll and get in and hit. And I remember the entire audience in the entire crowd at Comiskey just went nuts. Yeah. Went nuts. Same thing happened when I saw one of those outdoor concerts that I was talking about earlier, the Super Bowl of Rock. It could have been at the Nugent show, but they were playing music in between, you know, over the loudspeakers at Soldier Field. They were playing music in between bands while they were setting up, and they played Cashmere, and it was just when Physical came out, and the place went nuts. It was like thousands of people in Soldier Field, and it got that song. That song, Cashmere, being played over a loudspeaker at Soldier Field got a better reception than 38 Special did.
Really? Nothing for Hold On Loosely?
That was pre-Hold On Loosely.
Oh.
They nobody knew who the hell they were. They were related, you know, they were cousins with Lynyrd Skynyrd. Yeah, that's why they were on tour with Skynyrd.
He's a Van Zandt, right?
Yeah, he's a Van Zandt. And so, but nobody knew who they were. This is way before Hold On Loosely. And that song from Teachers. You ever see the movie
Caught Up in You?
No, that's 38 Special. But yeah, but no, the song, I think it's called Teachers. Teachers. It's from the movie with Nick Nolte. You ever see the movie Teachers with Nick Nolte?
No.
You haven't seen Teachers with Nick Nolte?
Oh no, I haven't.
Wow, one of Crispin Glover's early lunatic performances. Yeah, man, Teachers, Nolte.
Is Ralph Macchio in
it? Yeah, man. Macchio plays a tough guy in it. Arthur Hiller directed it, the very generic Arthur Hiller. One of my favorite quotes, you know, one of my favorite film critics of all time is Dave Kerr. He used to be here in Chicago. He wrote for The Reader. He wrote for The Trib. Now he lives in New York. And I think he's brilliant. I think he's one of the best film minds of all time. A very big influence on my the way I view film. I learned a lot from Dave, and I was thrilled that I became like a colleague of his. But my favorite quote of all time is Walter Hill directed a movie called Brewster's Millions. I don't know if you know Brewster's Millions.
I do know Brewster's Millions.
Richard Pryor, John Candy, not your typical Walter Hill movie. And Dave Kerr's opening line of the review is, evidently Walter Hill woke up and thought his driver's license said Arthur Hiller. And that just kills me. Evidently he thought his driver's license said Arthur Hiller. So that's Dave, man. Dave Kerr. Okay. Neil Young, Crazy Horse, Arc Weld from 1991. Yeah, the arc part of it is pretty insane. So anyway, that's half of the album is great. The other half is insane. It's just feedback, literally. Okay, let's take a break. The news is coming up right after this.
Over the years, you have been hunted by the man who threw harpoons, and in the long run, he will kill you just to feed the pets we raise. Put the flowers in your vase.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. And it's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, be 2 for Tuesday. What do we got there?
So that was a little Graham Nash, Wind on the Water, and that's coming to us from Rasco.
All right, there you go. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we've been talking about live albums and some of the best live albums of all time. And I was looking at this article that was put together by Rolling Stone, where they put together 50 of the best live albums of all time. And we've been talking about that and all that cool stuff. So if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Let's see. Here's Roosevelt on WGN. Hi, Roosevelt.
Hey, Nick. How you doing this morning?
All right.
The ones that come to mind. And by the way, I was at that concert you mentioned with the Police and Flock of Seagulls.
Right.
Oh, that was crazy. Yeah. Those days were crazy for live.
Yeah.
And you know what? In those days, Nick, they went on and on. There was no time limit. Like, you know, nowadays bands play, I think, 40 minutes, 45 minutes, like Taste of Chicago, that type of stuff. But getting to the albums, Rare Earth, double album set, I believe 1971, comes to mind. And they did a song, Get Ready. Remember Get Ready by the Temptations?
Yeah, of course.
And they did 20 minutes of Get Ready.
Yeah.
And what I liked about those albums, also Live in Japan, of course, Deep Purple.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, Nick, I don't know what you think of it, but in my opinion, Deep Purple sounded better on the live albums than they did on the studio albums.
Well, you know, they recorded two classic live albums, Made in Japan and Made in Europe, and they are considered two of the best live albums of all time. So yeah.
And a big part of the fact that they sounded great live is of course Richard Blackmore's guitar work. I mean, he was fantastic in those days. And then he went on his own to do Richard Blackmore's Rainbow.
Right.
Those two come to mind. And of course, in my opinion, one of the best live albums is Humble Pie with Peter Frampton on lead guitar.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic. To this day, I really enjoy those.
Yeah.
Those
all right. Albums. Thanks, Roosevelt.
Thank you.
All right, man. Yeah, Rare Earth. One of the few white artists signed to Motown. I think they were the first white band that was signed to Motown. Yeah, Rare Earth. They were a great band.
It was almost. Neil Young and Rick James, they were in a band together back in the day. You almost had Neil Young on Motown Records.
With Rick James?
Yeah, they were in a band. I want to say it was like the Minor Birds or something like that.
Okay.
I'm not lying to you.
No, I'm not. I don't doubt it. It just seems very strange. All right. How about this next one here? B.B. King live in Cook County Jail. You got to love that one. Says B.B. King's openers had a rough time as an announcer welcomes the likes of Sheriff Joseph Woods to the stage before the blues legend takes the stage for a 1970 show at Chicago's Cook County Jail. The prisoners greet the officer with aggressive boos and jeers. It was a tough crowd, but King entranced them with ease and humility. He was gracious, flirtatious, and even self-deprecating as he effortlessly ripped through songs like Worry Worry and Sweet 16. It was the best show we ever had, said the Department of Corrections Superintendent Winston Moore, who had invited King to perform for the prisoners. By the time he finished on a sweet note with the ballad, Please Accept My Love, King had the crowd on their feet hollering ecstatically. You gotta love that, man. B.B. King live in the Cook County Jail. God, that must have been amazing. All right, here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Nick, how's it going?
All right.
Man, great show.
Thank you.
One of my favorite ones was Foghat Live.
Oh, classic. I can't believe I forgot about that.
Oh, my God. What a great album.
Great classic live album, man. Oh.
So this is going to blow your mind. When UFO played at the M Theater,
yeah,
I was a guy that was show parking in the lots.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, absolutely. And then we sat on the front porch. I lived two blocks from the amphitheater, and we listened to the whole concert.
Oh, man.
It was insanely loud.
Yeah, I bet. And then, you know, and then a few months later, it became one of the best live albums ever recorded.
Oh, my God, the artwork on the amphitheater. I even told Tom I listened to the Black and Blue concert sitting on my front porch.
Yeah, oh, wow, Black Sabbath and Blue Oyster Cult.
Insane.
Yeah, that's great. Very cool.
Great show, Nick.
All right, Chris, thanks, buddy.
Yep.
I love it when there are concerts at Wrigley and people who live in Wrigleyville just sit outside. Because you can hear it, you know, blocks and blocks away. I have a friend who lives in Wrigleyville. Every time they would have a concert, he would just be sitting outside. He would grab like a barbecue, sit outside, a couple of beverages, and just listen to the music for free. So, yeah. All right. How about this? Joni Mitchell's live album, Miles of Isles, from 1974, is considered a classic. Velvet Underground, 1969, the Velvet Underground Live with Lou Reed from 1974. It was released in 74. It was from the 69 album year. And that's a pretty great one. How about this? Frank Sinatra, Sinatra at the Sands. Before he became Mr. New York, Frank Sinatra's signature town was Las Vegas, and Sinatra at the Sands captures him at his ring-a-ding-ding peak, complete with an adoring casino crowd and an epic tea-break monologue where the chairman cracks harsh on his rat-packed subordinates. Sands might be the ultimate period piece for those who prefer Johnny Mercer's songbook to the Jagger Richards, and it's Quincy Jones conducting Count Basie's orchestra and the 50-year-old crooner still at the height of his warm yet threatening vocal powers. The music is sensational, including a definitive versions of signatures like Fly Me to the Moon and I've Got You Under My Skin. For an added bonus, there's the introduction. The Sands is proud to present a wonderful new show by William Conrad, the well-traveled character who also narrated Rocky and Bullwinkle. That's pretty fantastic. Sinatra at the Sands.
I actually don't own any Sinatra albums except for that one.
Yeah.
It's his version of My Kind of Town just absolutely cooks.
Yeah.
Because it was Quincy Jones was running the band.
It was Count Basie's orchestra conducted by Quincy Jones.
That's
insane.
That's gold standard.
Yeah.
For that time.
And at the Sands.
At the Sands, baby.
Baby. Play little slots, go see Sinatra and Count Basie. Yeah.
If I'm ever in a band, that's what I'll tell them. Be like, yeah, man, we got to go play the Sands.
Got to play the Sands. Here's Robert on WGN. Hi, Robert.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right, buddy, what's up?
I got a great live band for you. I saw him at the Aragon way back when. Jay Giles Band, Live Full House.
Yeah. See, now that was back when Jay got, that was before Freeze Frame, when they were a different band.
Right.
You know, they were, you know, I mean, because once Freeze Frame came out, you know, and Centerfold, they a completely different band than what they were in the early days. But yeah, wow, you saw them at the Aragon, huh?
I saw them at the Aragon with the Atlanta Rhythm Section.
Oh, wow. Good old Atlanta Rhythm Section. Yeah. All right, cool.
And, it's hard to beat Magic Dick on harp.
Yeah, true. True, man.
That guy really jams. Whammer jammer.
Yep. All right, Robert, thanks, buddy.
All right, have a good show. Have a good show, man.
Take care, man. There you go. Yeah, Jay Giles.
Yeah, I've never... the only Jay Giles I've ever heard in repetition is Freeze Frame and Centerfold, and they drive me nuts.
Well, they're not that same. They're not the same band.
Well, not if they're playing at the Aragon at some point in their career.
They sounded completely different than they did before, basically, Peter Wolfe took over. It's similar to what Fleetwood Mac sounded like and how they changed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the early Fleetwood Mac stuff with Peter Green is completely different than stuff like Rumors. But yeah, Jay Giles became a different band. You're too young. You don't remember the you remember the video for Centerfold. My blood runs cold.
I know the song. I just don't. I can't.
Okay, the video is just a bunch of they're in a classroom. Jay Giles band is in a classroom. They're singing it, and there are girls in the classroom who are marching up and down in their like Catholic uniforms in the school. And back from the original days of MTV, there were five original VJs. You had J.J. Jackson. Yeah, man, J.J. Jackson. You had Alan Hunter. You had Mark Goodman. And then the two ladies, Nina Blackwood and the lovely Martha Quinn. I was a Martha Quinn guy. And there's a girl in that video that people were convinced it was Martha Quinn. Because it was like, when the video was popular, it was like, hey, is that Martha Quinn? I think that's Martha Quinn from MTV, and she's in the video. It's not her. But there's a girl in the video, the centerfold video, that looks like Martha Quinn.
Who's the lead singer of the Jay Giles band?
Peter Wolf.
Peter Wolf, he looks like a wolf. Like, he's,
yeah.
Those are the biggest eyebrows I've ever seen.
Yeah. So. All right, we got a break here, and we've got some weather for you, and then when we come back, we're going to talk more about live albums and live performances and all that cool stuff captured live. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Welcome back. Anyway, it's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. We've been talking about live albums and live performances and music and all kinds of fun stuff. I always have a lot of fun talking about music. And so we've got more live albums to discuss and to analyze, and we want to hear from you guys. Our phone lines are open at 312-981-7200. And here's Craig on WGN. Hi, Craig.
Hey, how's it going? Dick Danger, DJ Crime Fighter. How you doing?
Ah, I'm all right.
That's all right. Hey, my album is Roger Waters Live at the Berlin Wall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is a great album. And I also had tickets to his show when he came to Chicago, but I was in the hospital and couldn't go. And it was a huge, huge disappointment.
I bet, man. Yeah.
Massive. Yeah. And I also just seen UFO 2 years ago at the Holiday Star Theater, and they tore it up.
Yeah.
Even at his age, he still has a great voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Phil Moog. So. Great. All right. Thank you, Craig.
All right. Thank you.
Man, take care. There you go. Yeah. UFO. I remember, that classic concert that was captured by that live album that we've been talking about all morning, Strangers in the Night by UFO. I mean, that was one of the quintessential UFO shows. But they came back. I saw them in 1993, and they hadn't played in Chicago in years. They hadn't played in, it has to have been at least 10 years that they didn't play in Chicago, maybe even more than that. And this was in 1993, and they played two nights at the Vic. And at this point, I had never seen UFO, or at least this lineup, because it was the full-on original lineup that appeared on Strangers in the Night. And it was those guys. And so, of course, the place was packed, like completely packed. And people, there were a lot of, like, it was a lot of long-haired, black T-shirt wearing white guys. That was essentially what the crowd was back in those days, like in their mid to late 30s. Back in those days. And so there were a lot of us there, and lots of beer was being consumed. And the crowd was, they were not patient because it had been such a long time since UFO had played and since you had a chance to see these guys. And people who like UFO really, really, really like UFO. And I'm one of those guys. So crowd mostly, like I said, goofy white guys. Standing around waiting, and we've waited forever for this moment to arrive for UFO to finally get on stage here. And then lots of drinking was happening, but lots of heavy drinking, and lots of impatient dudes in the audience. And unfortunately, they had an opening band. I think if I remember correctly, they were just some local band that was hired by UFO to open for them, and the crowd would not even remotely go with it. They were shouting, they were chanting UFO, 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 while these guys were trying to play. They were booing, they were throwing stuff. They did not want these guys out on stage. It was really the worst behavior I've ever seen by a crowd, you know, and I felt terrible for the band, like the opening band. I felt terrible for these guys. They were in an unenviable situation here, being the band that's going to open for UFO after many, many years of them not performing and a bunch of goofy, drunk white dudes screaming. But I felt terrible for them. And so finally, like, the lead singer is like, hey, man. You know, and he made it worse. He made it worse because he's like, hey, man, I'm a UFO fan, too, and I want to see UFO, but you should just listen to our music, man. And I just was like, no, dude, don't say that. And then the crowd got even worse. They just started throwing stuff on stage. They started chanting UFO. And finally, the band left. So, you know, it didn't accomplish anything. Like, these guys, you know, these maniacs booing this opening band off the stage, didn't accomplish anything, because it's not like UFO was going to come out earlier. It's not like they were standing backstage going, oh, I guess these guys are done, we should get out there now. So instead of, like, having a band on stage, at least performing or, you know, keeping things busy, there was nothing to do. So people just started drinking more. And so there's no opening band. They got booed off the stage after, like, the second song. So now, you know, we've got, like, an hour to kill before that would even remotely think about having UFO come back out on stage. So now a couple of hours go by. Now everybody's completely hammered because all they've been doing is drinking. And then UFO came out, and they were great. I will say that they were absolutely fantastic. They basically just played Strangers in the Night from beginning to end. Maybe a couple extra songs here. They didn't do it. Okay, here's our new stuff. They didn't do any of that stuff. They played all the classic UFO stuff that everybody loved, and they were great. And we went both nights. I went back the second night. We go back the second night. It's essentially, like, almost the same crowd. Like, everybody, I think it was just like everybody who was there the night before was there the second night. Just a bunch of goofy, long-haired, black T-shirt wearing white guys. And the same thing happened to the opening band. Same thing happened to the opening band. They got booed off the stage. It was just, it was not pretty. It was not a pretty sight. So, Tom, what's going on in there? Anything?
Yeah, we're working on. We may need to run over to the other studio for the last half hour of the show. Do a little field trip.
Really?
Yeah, it'll be great.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll figure that out. So that should be interesting. If we've got to move over to the other studio, that'll be fun. So, technical difficulties, man. Live radio. Live radio, everybody. All right, a couple more live albums here that we're talking about. Aretha Franklin live at Fillmore West from 1971. Aretha Franklin asks, introducing Dr. Feelgood, she says, does anybody feel like hearing the blues? Anytime you get to hear Aretha Franklin is a good thing. Bob Marley and the Wailers live from 1975, considered one of the best live albums. We've mentioned this one a few times already, Deep Purple, made in Japan. It's four sides. Here's the thing about it. That's a double album. It's a double album, okay? Deep Purple, made in Japan, is a double album, and there's only seven songs on it. So, seven songs. This was back in the day, man, you know, because that was 1972. 1972 would be, you'd have a 20-minute drum solo, you know, a guitar solo, and you would extend the songs at least 5 to 10 minutes at least. So that was a different time. That was back in the 70s when it was considered cool to extend a song to, like, an hour. So, and Deep Purple did just that. Double album, seven songs. All right. Okay, let's see. I'm just going to throw it to the news here because we don't have our commercial vault going here. So let's just say that it is 4:30 right now. And Vic, why don't you take it? We'll go to the news. man. Rare Earth. Welcome back, everybody. Oh, boy. All right. Is that a twofer?
Yeah. Twofer Rare Earth.
All right. There we go. Sorry, I'm just a little... We're in a different studio right now.
Yeah, I feel weird.
It's strange. It's strange. It's very strange, because this studio is set up kind of the opposite of the studio that we use every morning. And so, yeah, it's a little weird. And it's a little disconcerting to just suddenly have to run down the hallway and jump into another studio and get everything set up.
You're preaching to the choir.
Thank you for your patience, everybody. We're here. Everything is going to be fixed, and we're sure about that. We're rolling out the end of the show here in studio. What is this one? It's A, right?
Studio A, baby.
Yeah, this is Studio A. We use Studio D. So there it is. Hey, all right, welcome back. We are talking live albums. And let's see. Here is Sean on WGN. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Nick. I just wanted to bring up Kiss Alive and Kiss Alive 2.
Yeah. Those were game changers for Kiss. That first Kiss Alive album, you know, they had kind of a small audience. They didn't sell a ton of records, but after Kiss Alive, it was all over the place, man.
So I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but I did want to say that one of my earliest memories of becoming a rocker was when I was about 8 years old. I bought Kiss Alive 2, and it came with tattoos.
Yep.
And my mother did not know this, and I proceeded to put all the Kiss tattoos on my belly and my arm. And she was mortified, and of course, she tried to scrub them off me, and it only half worked.
Yeah. That's hilarious. That's great. I remember, Sean, when Kiss Alive 2 came out, I was at the record store waiting outside for it to be released.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I wasn't old enough to do that, but I did have the double album, and I was forever changed.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Nick.
Take care, everybody. Yeah, I was at the record store when Kiss Alive 2 came out. I was outside the door waiting, me and like five other people. And we walked in, and they literally opened the box. They were just opening the box. They didn't even put the price on the album yet. And I was standing there going, give me the record now. I need it now. Kiss Alive 2. Because Kiss Alive went, I mean, that was just a massive, massive success. So, all right, how about Iggy and the Stooges, Metallic KO from 1976? Frank Zappa and the Mothers, Roxy and Elsewhere from 74, also listed as one of the best live albums of all time. Bill Withers, live at Carnegie Hall. Where's Kevin Powell? Got to mention a Bill Withers live album here, Tom. I think we should call up Kevin Powell.
Yeah, Bill Withers?
Yeah. This rainy Friday night in October of 1972 was less than a year and a half after Bill Withers' commercial breakthrough allowed him to quit a day job as an aircraft parts factory. But the rising soul star holds the stage at one of the world's most prestigious venues, like a seasoned pro. This is Carnegie Hall. Withers reminisces about his grandma's church. At the funeral, they used to have to tie the caskets down, he said. And describes the dating scene. He's encountered many ladies who are not too prone to trust anybody, as he coolly, as if he's entertaining guests in his own living room. His band, propelled by drummer James Gadson, led by pianist Ray Jackson, roughs up Use Me to accentuate the carnality and plays the sweaty closer Harlem Cold Bologna as part of a revival meeting. I bet K-Paul has that record in his collection. We mentioned Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band Live Bullet a couple of times already this morning. Duke Ellington, Ellington at Newport from 1956. Yeah. Led Zeppelin, How the West Was Won from 2003. Led Zeppelin are undoubtedly one of the greatest live acts of the 70s, but their only live album from that era. The soundtrack to 1976's Song Remains the Same captured them on a rather limp night. The situation was finally resolved in 2003 when Jimmy Page combed through hours of tapes of the band's 1972 tour and cobbled together this killer 18-track set. There are tons of Zep bootlegs floating around, but none of them sound this crisp and alive, even though they occasionally cheated and combined multiple versions of a song into one. Highlights include a ferocious immigrant song, a 25-minute Dazed and Confused... A 23-minute Whole Lot of Love.
Yeah. That's the real highlight, if you ask me.
Is the 23-minute Whole Lot of Love?
Well, yeah, because they go in and they do different songs in the middle of it.
Oh.
So they start out doing a Whole Lot of Love, and then they do like Hello, Mary Lou. They do a bunch of stuff.
Wow. I don't have How the West Was Won.
It's good, but yeah. it is clearly cheating. It's very much like,
yeah.
Do not believe that that was done in one night. It was just cobbled together from various tapes and all that kind of stuff. But the end result is really, really cool.
Okay. Hey, by the way, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. How about Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band live 75 to 85? I remember when this came out, it was massive. It just came out in 1985. This was just less than a year after Born in the USA was out, and he was, I mean, Born in the USA put him into the stratosphere. And I remember when this live record came out, everybody I knew had it. Grateful Dead, Europe, 1972.
Definitely a favorite among deadheads.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, how many show, again, like, you know, like Zeppelin or Fish or any of these bands, I'm sure that these guys have, like, tons of performances already.
Yeah. I don't know how people can be collectors of that. Because it's just, especially Grateful Dead, you've got, like, what, 50-plus years now?
Yeah.
Of just material?
Yeah.
Hours of shows? It's ridiculous.
Jimmy plays Monterey from 1986. It was 9 songs that he played in 1967 at the Monterey International Pop Festival, all captured on one.
I'm a big fan of Band of Gypsies. That's my favorite live.
Yeah,
that's insane.
It's great.
He's just shredding.
Rolling Stones, we mentioned Get Your Ya-Ya's Out from 1970. The concept of Ya-Ya's was to document their brilliant sound. It's about as untampered as possible, Keith Richards said. Live, every part of the band was louder and meaner. Never before had Charlie Watts sound. What was that? What was that?
I don't know.
This is going to be the longest 12 minutes of my radio career. Something just went haywire. I don't know. Okay.
It's all good.
Okay. Jerry Lee Lewis, live at the Star Club in Hamburg, 1964. You know, it's hard to capture the insanity of Jerry Lee Lewis. Did you ever see Great Balls of Fire with Dennis Quaid as Jerry Lee Lewis?
Well, we talked about it last week because I think we got a twofer, a triple play for Jerry Lee Lewis, and you mentioned it. I said, you know, I'm going to go check it out. And I watched it, and
he's good.
He's good.
Yeah.
The rest of the movie,
not so good.
But interesting.
Alec Baldwin, though. Alec Baldwin, fantastic.
That's true.
Yeah.
True. But it was, you know, I don't really know much about Jerry Lee Lewis, and now I know maybe a little bit more.
He's a madman.
Yeah.
He was a madman. He set the piano on fire. Follow that, killer. John Coltrane live at the Village Vanguard from 1962.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's some good stuff right there. Sam Cooke live at the Harlem Square Club from 1963. It was released in 1985. The great Sam Cooke. Cheap Trick at Budokan comes in at number 13 on this list. That's too low.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably top five.
Easy.
When it comes to live albums,
easy.
Everybody pretty much owns the Budokan.
By the end of 1978, Cheap Trick had 3 albums on the shelves and a great catalog of songs like Surrender and I Want You to Want Me, but they had yet to attract a big audience in America. They did have a huge following in Japan and were treated like the Beatles when they arrived in April of that year, leading to a wild night of music at Tokyo's Nippon Budokan. Originally released solely in Japan, the label wisely released it in America after radio stations began playing the live version of I Want You to Want Me, and import copies began selling hugely inflated prices. The album came out in the States in February of 79, and I Want You to Want Me hit number 7 on the Hot 100. Their cover of Ain't That a Shame by Fats Domino got a lot of airplay. We owned the material, guitarist Rick Nielsen said in 2013. We played everywhere we could. We toured constantly. We knew what we were doing. Ain't That a Shame is a fantastic cover.
Oh, yeah.
Muddy Waters at Newport, 1960. We mentioned this one a little bit earlier, Talking Heads, Stop Making Sense, which is a fantastic live album, and as far as I'm concerned, and I mentioned this before, the best concert movie ever made. This one was mentioned earlier, too, number 10 here, as we get into the top 10 best live albums of all time, Nirvana, MTV Unplugged in New York, which, you know, we talked about already as an incredible document. How about this one, number 9, Bob Dylan, The Bootleg Series, Volume 4, Bob Dylan Live, 1966, at the Royal Albert Hall.
That was...
released in 98.
Yeah, but that was a ridiculous... I think he did multiple nights, I want to say, at the Royal Albert Hall. It was just insane.
Yeah, but I guess there was a couple of hecklers in the audience, Dylan yelled back at him.
Yeah.
MC5... Kick Out the Jams. You can't not talk about MC5 when it comes to that. Grateful Dead, Live Dead from 1969. Kiss Alive comes in at number 6, very high on the list. But it's a classic. I mean, is it a classic album? There's no question about it. B.B. King, Live at the Regal from 1965. As we mentioned earlier, The Who, Live at Leeds. The loudest album ever. It's a very, very, very loud album. Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison, which we mentioned, and Vic was just talking about how he had that one to listen to as part of the top 100. And I guess the other live album that he listened to was James Brown, Live at the Apollo. Allman Brothers at Fillmore East. That's the album that put them on the map.
Oh, yeah, and those live versions of those songs are untouchable.
Well, Whippin' Post is like 25 minutes long.
I'm a big fan of One Way Out.
Yeah.
On that record is just magical.
Yeah, that was the album that put them, you know, that made them superstars. So, and then they say the number one live album of all time has been mentioned. It's James Brown Live at the Apollo, which if you've not listened to, it kind of speaks for itself. It's an amazing record. King Records founder Sid Nathan declined to jump on James Brown's idea of a live album. They hadn't been established as a profitable venture, and he wasn't particularly interested in anything but singles at the time. Didn't nobody believe us? None of the company executives believed us, recalled hype man Bobby Bird. But see, we are out there, and we saw the response as we run our show down. In turn, Brown self-financed the show and even was prepared to self-release it, though Wednesday was usually amateur night at Harlem's historic Apollo Theater. The hardest-working man in show business was in his prime. Despite the 27-minute runtime, he was a tease. At first, he tries alternating between the locomotive rhythms of his review and the famous flames, and acting cool with former ballads like Try Me. The longer he tries to restrain himself, though, the more his voice quivers before he eventually caves, shouting and screaming as he begs and pleads. Yeah. So.
I mean, what is there to say? He's the godfather of soul.
James Brown, man.
He's the man.
Remember when he was in, which Rocky was he in? 4.
Yeah.
Rocky 4?
Living in America. Yeah.
That was the Russian with Dolph Lundgren.
Yep, man.
Yeah, and then he shows up, James Brown just shows up, and that revitalized his career.
No doubt.
That appearance in Rocky IV. Somebody said to me that Rocky IV is almost 80% training montage. It's like...
It's true.
It is. It's true. There's like an excessive amount of training montages in that movie.
Well, when you're getting ready to fight Dolph Lundgren...
Yeah. You know, what's his name in it? Clubber Lang? No. Clubber Lang was Mr. T.
Mr. T, yeah.
What was his name? Ivan Drago.
Yeah, Ivan Drago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then his son comes back as the villain for Creed 2.
Creed 2 was good, man.
It was awesome. I was so glad that they decided to bring the Russian thing
back. And I gotta say, you know, because I think Rocky IV is a really stupid movie. And I realize that it has an emotional attachment. A lot of people love it. I know that Eric and Colin, that's one of their favorite movies because it was the early days of cable. It was on every single day.
Right.
But I got to say, I didn't care for Rocky IV at all. I just thought it was really stupid. But yet, that scene in Creed II, where Dolph Lundgren is sitting in his restaurant I got the chills. You know what I mean? Like when Rocky walks in, there's Drago sitting in his restaurant. I was like, ooh.
Say what you will about Rocky IV, but the chemistry was undeniable between those two. He was a great villain.
Yeah.
I thought Dolph was a great villain
yeah.
in that.
Who did he kill? He killed Apollo in that
one,
right?
Yeah, he kills Apollo.
Okay, because in the third one, Mr. T kills Burgess Meredith. Doesn't he grab him and say, get out of the way, old man, and throw him against the wall?
God, it's been a long time. I just know Rocky III is the one with Thunderlips.
Thunderlips, yeah.
The greatest.
That's the best.
The GOAT.
Rocky III is actually, I love that movie. It's terrible, but I love it. So, all right, we got to wrap things up here in a foreign land. Hopefully we'll be back in Studio D for the show tomorrow morning. All right, shall we break here?
Shall we?
Let's see what happens. I'm going to press a button. Let's cross our fingers and see what happens. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back on Wednesday for some Tech Talk and Wildcard Wednesday as well.